place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go.
609, welcome and hello and hi and how are you? Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Glad y'all got my invitation. Glad no one turned it down. And we begin the morning with a first-time World Series participant, in case you could give a rat's behind about who's in the MLB playoffs last night. The Washington Nationals finished off a sweep of the Cardinals. That should make Cub fans happy.
Why? Well, yeah, I mean, I guess because it was the Cardinals who were on the receiving end.
Right.
But it's Cubs fans would rather they be there, not the Washington Nationals.
Well, you got to play the cards that their hand dealt you with, the one that you brought cards, to the dance. Yes. I think we all know that old saying.
Yes, that's true.
I don't think you got that right.
What? I mean, they were very impressive. They're going nuts in Washington.
You know what they sort of feel like? White Sox 2005.
A little bit.
Get hot at the right time and just roll.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they've never won, so I'm all for them.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, we're sorry, Mary.
Except for the shark thing, that clapping thing they always do.
What's the clapping thing they do?
I don't know. Don't they do something weird?
But
shark thing.
I don't really understand.
Do they sing baby shark? Is that what bugs you?
I think it's related to the baby shark thing.
By the way, speaking of babies, you know me with the ADD. Speaking of babies, yesterday, hanging out for a while with the family, and was laying on the floor with little baby Isaac, and I made baby Isaac laugh.
Aww.
Did you?
Huh?
Is that a first?
Aww. Yeah. Yeah.
What were you doing?
I told him some Trump stuff. I did some Trump material. No, I was doing some very advanced intellectual stuff. I did this.
Oh,
popping
babies
sounds.
Love that.
And then I turned at him and giggled, and he giggled back.
Are you sure he did?
I feel like we're vibing, really.
Are you sure he didn't need his diaper changed?
No, it's beyond gassy giggles.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, I was in a band called Gassy Giggles. I think we all remember that, children's music. So anyway, the Nationals get a week off now, waiting for Houston or the Yankees, and what is that, 2-1? Stroh?
That's 2-1. They're supposed to play tonight, but it looks like that game may get rained out.
Oh, suck it up.
Easy for you to say.
Said the man that wouldn't play golf yesterday.
He was chilly.
Yeah, just the threat of rain kept you away from the golf course.
It was chilly, and I might not have had a wrap. All right, so we got to get the top six at six. Got a lot to do, as always, on the show. I'll tell you what's coming up on the show shortly. But we are going to do Ask the Lawyer today. So if you have questions you want to ask Karen Conti about legal stuff going on, about whether or not you can make bail, you can always preface those with, a friend of mine.
Asking for a friend.
Had something happen. Yeah. 312-981-7200. Texters and phone callers all morning long about everything, but we'll tell you when to call in. Oh, right around 6:30 and get ready for Karen Conti. Let's do the top six. At six.
Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't keep your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60 Minute Men.
Item number one. Looks like we have a teacher strike. Tomorrow will be the deciding day. There is one last chance today for the two sides to get together and go, you suck. No, you suck. And possibly think of the kids. Try to get their act together. But as of right now, it didn't go well yesterday. And the Chicago Teachers Union is ready to strike tomorrow if they cannot reach a deal. A strike from the 25,000-plus teachers union would cause cancellation of classes for 300,000 Chicago students. And, of course, that's just one of the dominoes. The other part is you have parents who have to try to figure out how to take care of their kids who would normally go to school, who have to go to work. And, you're leaving your little kids at home, or do you have to find somebody? It's a whole mess. At any rate, CPS has published a contingency plan for parents outlining alternative options for students should a strike occur. Libraries, parks, community centers, and other sites that will be staffed to supervise children while schools are closed if, in fact, the strike happens. In addition to CPS buildings, all Chicago public libraries will accept students, as well 18 parks, designated safe haven sites, and other community partner sites. I mean, you know, obviously there's some neighborhoods in town. You don't want your kids having free time just to wander around. So it's a bad story, and I would hope cooler heads would prevail and the CTU and the city would get their act together and solve this today. There's always hope, G.
Indeed.
You always be positive.
Absolutely.
There's got to be a morning after. Oh, next. 12 Democratic candidates crowded onto the stage last night for the sixth Democratic debate. I didn't watch it.
I watched it.
I watched some of it.
Yeah. It was 3 hours long. And
too many people.
There's too many people, and it was too long. Here's what you know, because I watched highlights this morning, because that's the job. You know,
it
I got to get up in the morning. I got to get out of bed. I got to watch.
Poor
gotta
baby. Watch, oh, we feel
and
so
and then I
got to
be here till 10:15 this morning.
Oh.
I don't know how I do it. Anyway, Elizabeth Warren got beat up on last night. Vice President Biden was, once again, not all that impressive in his debate situation. Pete Buttigieg had a good night. Kamala Harris and others were kind of eh. And is my hold on a second.
Yes, I think you're getting a call, Steve.
You're getting a call. Is President Trump calling you this early? This time on your cell phone.
My cell phone's going off. Why isn't?
Is that your alarm?
It was like an alarm of some kind.
A little late. It's your grandson.
Yeah, he's calling up to say, "Hey, do some more of that Trump stuff."
Yeah, you got to step up your alarm game sound. You know,
you didn't think
it was very gentle.
No, I didn't like that. You got
to. What do you wake up to?
Oh, I wake.
Oh,
up.
Oh no, you don't want to hear that. That's the anxiety alarm. That's the ding 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 ding.
Oh no! I'd have a heart attack. Speaking of heart attacks, Bernie Sanders looked better last night. See how I brought that all back around full circle? Bernie Sanders looked better last night, and Bernie Sanders is going to get an endorsement from the squad this weekend in a story just announced a few moments ago. The squad will be endorsing Bernie Sanders. But it looked like he dropped a couple of pounds. I'm not advocating a heart attack. I don't think anybody should just go out and have one. He did, and he's come along, and he's better.
You know, it all started out, they start out very polite, and they're adhering to the moderator's time constraints, and as the evening goes along, they're stepping on each other and pointing fingers at each other.
Right.
There was just one cute moment where it was Biden, Sanders, and Warren. It was a shot of the three of them looking at the Hawaiian congressman, Tulsi.
Mm-hmm. Tulsi Gabbard.
And she was speaking to them about how it's not fair that they're not at being, she's not being, the younger folks aren't being asked about their health. And the three of them were looking at her like lovingly, like grandparents would look at a granddaughter.
Isn't that cute?
It was like that moment was, yeah. I was like, oh, wow. This says a lot.
Felicity Huffman's in jail for two big weeks. Her 14-day sentence started yesterday. As part of the college mission scandal. Aunt Becky still waiting to be sentenced in her end of this, and I don't actually know when that's going to happen. But she is, Felicity Huffman's in a federal correction institute in Dublin, California, 40 miles east of San Francisco. She'll have to pay a fine of $30,000 and perform 250 hours of community service. Look, nobody wants to do a day in jail.
No.
Let alone 2 weeks, but there you go.
I did see the prosecutor do an interview, and he said that with Felicity Huffman, she felt very contrite and very apologetic, and with Aunt Becky, she wasn't as apologetic. So
the great actor William H. Macy, shameless husband to Felicity Huffman, dropped her off, said, "See you in 2 weeks, honey."
He was lovingly holding her.
He literally dropped her off in prison.
Yes.
All right, see you in 2 weeks.
As you have to do. You usually have a loved one drop you off.
Take care.
It's like a vacation there, though, I hear. She can read.
Oh,
you
says
know,
the
do
woman who's
stuff.
Never done hard time in Attica.
Well,
call me when you need
I
a ride.
Do something as stupid as she did.
Yeah, you're right about that. You want to split this up, come back and do the rest? What do you want to do, Super Joe? You tell me.
I'd rather do it all in one chunk.
Let's finish it then. Number four. NASA revealed two new spacesuits for the Artemis astronauts on Tuesday with live demonstrations. One of the reasons they got new spacesuits is they are going to have the first female-only spacewalk. And they tried to do this in March, and they didn't have spacesuits that fit.
Unbelievable.
And by the way, they weren't tasteful either, and they did not go with the space boots. So these women are going to go out and fix, I think it's a battery problem on the space station, but it's pretty cool. And it's amazing to think that here we are in 2019. It hasn't happened yet. But there have been, I think, a dozen or so women. Steve, you would know this better.
Yeah,
I
was this is one of resident space experts. Steve
yeah, there have
Krasanich.
Been quite a few.
Isn't there like a dozen women that
oh,
have
yeah.
done this?
There are quite a few women spacewalkers. These spacesuits that they've developed, that they've announced, that will be for lunar landing and for Mars exploration. So these will replace those big old bulky Apollo spacesuits that we'll see in the future for some of these planetary missions.
Item number five, Steve, is you. How are you feeling?
I'm doing a little bit better. Still a little meh, but better. Thanks for asking.
All right, item number six. Scooter season's over. If you never got one of those lime colored, is that right?
That's correct.
If you never got one of those lime colored scooters, you're pretty much done. They're pulling them off the streets. The city will review feedback and data on the program, which included massive injuries caused by the scooters, and decide if Chicago wants to renew a deal and keep them around. You know what might be fun is make the CTU negotiators and the city negotiators ride scooters to the next meeting and see what happens. That's it. That's your top six.
That's it. That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Gilkey manufactures the highest quality vinyl and fiberglass windows in an endless variety of styles and colors. Do you mind if I clear my throat here, Steve?
I'll take it. And now, here's more Dave.
Call Gilkey now, and for a limited time, buy one, get one 40% off on fiberglass or vinyl windows and doors, or no interest financing.
Take another break, Dave. Stand by. Here's Dave clearing his throat one more time, but you don't know that because we're covering for him. But now back to Dave.
No interest financing for up to 5 years. Call Gilkey, 888-3-GILKEY. That's...
Take one more break, Dave. Dave's taking one last clearing of his throat. And back to Dave. Right now, G is giving Dave the Heimlich maneuver to finish this commercial.
Oh, my gosh. 888-3-GILKEY. Will this thing ever go away?
I think you should lay down for a while and see if it passes.
Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best.
Coming up, we just received confirmation President Trump will be calling. The Trumpster's calling today. So, you know, it's always interesting when he calls because he's very generous in his conversation with me as I am with him. There's a lot of give and take. So, in other news, you ride your escalators wrong. What?
How?
I saw this story last night. It made me laugh. Apparently, we all have been riding escalators wrong. We live in a big city, one of the biggest cities in the world.
Yes.
Chicago, Illinois. And there's lots of escalators.
How are we doing it wrong?
Easy. Don't get so jumpy. This is the problem. You on an escalator would be jumpy. When it comes to riding escalators, the etiquette should be taken seriously. You stand in the right lane, you walk in the left, and never ever block traffic by putting yourself between the two. I like to take my bag at the airport, put it right in the middle, and then take a nice wide stance and just stand there and go, I'm sorry, are you trying to make a plane?
Oh, I know. That everybody knows. It's the etiquette thing.
Not everybody knows.
Always stay to the right.
Yeah. Users stand in the middle of the escalator with hands on both railings for maximum safety is the new recommendation. In other words, you got to make a plane, you're going to have to run when you get to the bottom or the top. Maximum safety means stand in the middle of the escalator with hands on both rails.
So we shouldn't be standing off to one side.
Nope.
Even on the moving stairway. Or the moving walkway in Terminal 1?
People should keep a steady grip on the handrail, stand in the center, and step and face forward. However, the passenger in front of you is standing in the middle with just one hand on the rail. You still wouldn't have an easy time continuing your uphill climb without asking them to move. If you're really in a hurry, I suppose you could risk your life.
Who is...
Can you imagine what a jerk you would be perceived as if you're standing in the middle holding onto both rails?
Who is recommending this?
The National Escalator people.
And have we had a lot of escalator incidents recently?
Yeah,
where
somebody must have
fallen. Some new rules?
Each day, thousands of people die on escalators across America.
We could do a test case here because we have escalators in the building.
Here's the deal. The Otis Elevator Company are the people recommending this. And I want to meet this guy, Otis, man, because this Otis guy has got it locked when it comes to elevators.
Oh. Right. Well, do you think he's trying to run the escalator people out of business?
That's possible. That's possible.
He's probably the most hated man at airports.
Otis?
Trying to get on the train or the subway. You can't do that.
There's also Schindler Elevator. That's the other company.
Yeah, but that's just an upstart.
So I have friends that work there.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Oh, well, we like them then.
Yes, we do.
Speaking of your uphill climb or downhill march on an escalator, while choosing to walk might shave a few seconds off your personal commute, studies have shown that if all people stood using both escalator lanes instead of leaving one for walking, the machine could carry about 31 extra passengers per minute. I don't know who did the math. I don't know when the last time was they got out, but I'm not buying it.
They say that about traffic, too. Like, there would be less congestion if people would stop, you know, changing lanes to try to get ahead.
Yeah, well, I believe that.
And if the slow people stay in the right.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Speedwalking city slickers might balk at the idea of standing still, says this story. But hopefully this information will help them. I'm going to go to the airport today and find a steep escalator and just hold on to both handrails and just ride up and down for a couple hours.
Just go downstairs here.
Yeah.
But that escalator's not impressive. It's one floor.
Sorry.
Plus I mean, maybe I could go downstairs and warm up before I go to the airport, take on the big escalator, right? Yeah. 6:27. All right. This is the important news you get on this show. Remember, Trump's calling after 7, but ask the lawyer coming up. You want to get in line with your lawyer question now for Karen Conti? 312-981-7200.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti joins us. She's on the radio many, if not most, Sunday nights. At what time?
From 7 to 9.
And you talk about legal stuff?
I talk about everything. I talk about anything that's of interest, but I do answer legal questions.
So we thought we'd do that again today, 312-981-7200. We do this occasionally. You probably should do it even more often. This is a chance for you to ask your lawyer, and your lawyer is Karen Conti, one of the best. And she can give you basic information. She can't solve your case. She can't give you the specific ABC trail you need to follow, but there's basic questions people have. So let me fire a few of these at you, and then we'll grab some phone callers and some texts. That work for you?
That works for me. Let's do it.
312-981-7200 is the number to call or text. 312-981-7200. How do I know I should sue somebody, and what's the basic, line that you should achieve to sue?
Okay, that's a big question. Depends on what, right? You know, I think that deciding to sue, getting involved in litigation is expensive from a legal standpoint, obviously. If you're paying a lawyer by the hour, you better have a lot of damages. When I say damages, I mean lost money before you hire a lawyer and start paying a lawyer by the hour. Lawyers can be between $200 and sometimes $600 an hour, and that gets really expensive really fast. And you also get involved in litigation, and it's really a drag. I mean, it brings you down. You've got to show up in court. You've got to cooperate. You've got to produce documents. And it's not something that you should walk into easily. Of course, I'd have to know what happened to you. Was it a personal injury? You know, was it some breach of contract? I'd probably give you some better advice if I had some more
details.
Well,
the reason I gave you such a broad question is, I'm a pretty face. I'm not that bright. But I thought in the past, over the years we've known each other, you have sort of put it in a box for me of were you damaged? Can you prove damages? That's the go sign. That's the green light. Is that basically true?
Yes, that's exactly true, because all the harm in the world could be done to you. And, you know, if you don't have damages, why are you bringing the lawsuit? The law doesn't give you, a jury doesn't give you $1 million just because your feelings were hurt or because somebody did something wrong. You have to prove some tangible loss, whether it's medical bills or you lost business, you lost your job, something like that.
Should you take the breathalyzer test if you're stopped and assumed to be drunk while you're driving?
Generally speaking, if you've had anything to drink, you probably should not do that, because they're not testing you because they're interested in determining whether you're drunk. They think you're drunk, and they want the proof, and that will be the proof. It's easier to beat a charge without a breathalyzer, but knowing that if you don't take the breathalyzer, you refuse, then you do lose your license for a period of time, and that is just whether you win the case or not. So part of your privileges of being a driver is you submit to that test. If you deny taking it, then you do lose your license, but your lawyer will have an easier time trying the case if you are DUI. But if you've had nothing to drink, I don't have any problem with telling people to take the breathalyzer.
Right. Keeping in mind that people's time matters and there's a cash value to time, does it ever pay to go to court to fight one of those automated camera tickets?
You know, people get really upset about these things and they go and they fight them. I personally wouldn't spend the time doing it. And generally speaking, they're pretty accurate. And it's really hard to say, what are you going to say? That wasn't me, when the driver's license, license plate is right there. I say it's not worth it. If you drive for a living and you can't get 3 tickets because you're going to lose your license, maybe then you should go and do that. If you're really interested in that, too, you can hire a lawyer to do that. And lawyers don't charge that much for traffic court. But a lawyer's going to tell you right away, you're not going to beat this one. So, you might want to consult with the lawyer, but I just don't think it's worth the time.
In a related question, if it's a court appearance ticket, we hear often that many times the ticket writing officer doesn't show up. Does that automatically get you out of trouble?
It does not. That's kind of a urban legend, but no, that's absolutely not true. And the prosecution will get a continuance, so the police officer will come. Usually they do show up because they write their tickets for days that they are in court, but if they, for some reason, are not in court, they will just get a continuance.
Texter writes, my ex wants to claim my daughter lives with him when he gets laid off this winter so he can get more unemployment. He never sees her. He rarely makes payments for child support. He claims there's no financial repercussions for me if I let him do so. Your thoughts? And by the way, in parentheses, she says, yes, I know he's an idiot. That's why he's the ex.
So she wants to claim him on he wants to claim the child on taxes. Is that what she's asking?
Claim the child as a dependent for unemployment benefits.
Okay. I don't think there's a problem with that because she's going to get more money and the money can go to her. When you have a dependent and you get unemployment, there's a portion of that payment that goes to the child. But I guess I'm hearing it that maybe that's on taxes, and that's a whole different story, and that usually is provided for in the judgment. So when you get divorced, you determine who gets that exemption every year. Usually you alternate it. But if he's not providing support and he's not paying child support, then she should get the exemption. You don't want to be fighting about that because if you both claim the child, the IRS could come in and audit you saying, well, which one should it be?
And if this guy claims that the daughter lives with him, that's no legal issues for the wife unless she signs something that says, oh, yeah, that's true, right?
That's true. Yeah, no one should lie to the government. That's kind of a rule number one, right?
Did you tell that to everyone running for president on both sides? All right, let's go to the phone here, and we'll grab some more on the other side as well. But speaking of marriage and troubles, hi, Beth.
Hello.
What's your question?
I got a divorce probably 3 years ago, and my ex at this point has lost his job. At what point can he go back and try to change or try to get maintenance, which neither of us has to pay at this point?
He cannot go back and get maintenance, Beth, but are there children involved? Is he paying child support?
No, they're adult children, and they both graduated from college at this point.
No, you don't have anything to worry about because maintenance is provided for right at the beginning of your divorce. You can't go back to get maintenance. Property division and maintenance are things that are not modifiable. Anything relating to children, just so your listeners know, that's always modifiable. So if someone gets a better job or someone loses their job, they can always come back into court to modify. But when it comes to the settlement for the parties, you don't have anything to worry about. He cannot come back and get maintenance from you.
Hope that helps, Beth. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Just an extension of that question, Karen. If somebody is, maybe hiding a little money and you find out after you sign off on whatever you're going to get, can you go back and say, hey, he didn't tell the truth?
Yes, you can. You can claim that there was not disclosure and that the judgment was based upon fraud. We now put in judgments, at least I put in my judgments for dissolution, that if there is an asset that the parties find later, that the party who finds it gets 75% of it. So there is an incentive to disclose everything because if something turns up later, like someone says, oh my gosh, I forgot I had a pension from General Electric from the time I worked when I was 20, then 75% of it goes to the person who finds it, which is a good deal.
Ask Aaron Conti, ask the lawyer. More of this in a second. 312-981-7200 is the number. Calls and texts. All right, 6:49, Karen Conti is back with us. Let's continue, Karen, shall we?
We shall.
Let's see, Cindy joins us now from Elgin. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning. This is a little complicated, but I'm going to try to get through it.
Go ahead.
It's more of a question than anything else. A friend of mine's house was foreclosed on. When they went to court, the bank never produced a number, so the bank lost the home. And when the judge ruled, the judge said there was no known chargeable debt. The bank didn't appeal. They had the 30 days to appeal. They didn't appeal. They did file again with the same numbers, the same everything, a second time in court. They lost that to res judicata. They didn't appeal that ruling either. Now they filed a third time, and this judge, with the same numbers, the same everything, the judge in the third case gave the house back to the bank.
So your question is?
I'm just curious. if the law is the law, how can the third judge override first and the second judges?
Okay, interesting. Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, res judicata, people have heard that term. That means the thing has already been decided. And therefore, you don't get a third bite at the apple. There's something here that I don't know, because generally speaking, you can't go back and keep suing someone for the same exact thing. And once it's been decided, that's binding on the parties. So my guess is that something changed. There was something, if there's new evidence, that shouldn't have allowed the party to go back in and sue. I don't know this. And, you know, if someone gave me some more facts, I might be able to figure that out. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Gee.
Well, this might be a little bit of a sad question, but when a parent passes or a spouse passes, how much of that individual's debt should the child or the spouse incur?
You do not inherit debt. However, if, let's just say, a spouse dies and all of the money is going to go to the wife, if the husband had debts, then all of his assets, whatever his assets, would go to pay that debt first, and then she would get the rest of it. So she wouldn't inherit the debt, but she wouldn't be able to take any money from the estate unless and until those debts were paid. So the same with a parent. If a parent dies and has $20,000 in credit card debt and a house, and G is going to inherit the house, you would have to take the house, sell it, pay off that $20,000 in debt, and then you could take the remainder.
Dave.
And Karen, there is a story in the Chicago Tribune this morning from Paul Sullivan. The headline is, Theo Epstein's dog damaged an Arizona rental home with excessive peeing, the owners say. Now they're suing the Cubs president. Apparently, there was a lawsuit filed this week in Maricopa County, Arizona, saying that the owners of a house rented by the Cubs president, Theo Epstein, in the spring, are suing him because the Epstein's dog, Winston, damaged the house by urinating excessively during spring training in 2015, and they presented a repair estimate of $51,000.
Well, what kind of carpet is it? Gold?
It penetrated through the carpeting and pad to the slab.
Mm. I still don't know how you get to $51,000.
And you think Theo could have hired a dog walker?
Well, yeah, and also come to some sort of settlement so it stays out of the paper. I mean, it's a very bizarre deal.
Yeah. Although, you know, I have to say, when you've got big shots involved in anything, people like to sue big shots because there's deep pockets, and they do settle things because they don't want to be having their name run through the. But, you know, I have to say, you know, a normal rental situation is, you know, normal wear and tear is not something that the tenant has to pay for. So, you know, if you're walking on a carpet and it gets a little worn, that is not something that's on the landlord. But if it's something over and above that, holes in the wall, dog pee, you know, all of that stuff, you know, you're entitled to get your, you know, the damages for that. It's just hard to believe it's that much money.
Yeah. Right. And if you back this up, Karen and Dave, you have the dispute. The landlord reaches out to Theo. Theo says, no, I'm not paying for that. And the lawyers get involved. I assume they make a second effort. I mean, there's, in other words, there's conversation, Karen, before a lawsuit is filed.
Generally speaking, there is. There should be. But there are some lawyers who just bring the lawsuit. I would imagine that there were talks. And I would imagine there were arguments. And I imagine that Theo's lawyers probably said, no, this is not. I'm not going to do this. Sue me. And that's what happened.
By the way, the owners kept the $5,000 security deposit, but the Epstein family had to leave the home early because of a scorpion infestation. An exterminator discovered 45 scorpions on the property.
There's not a house from hell.
Doesn't it sound like
my goodness.
What's going on there?
That may have been what started it, right? We're leaving on the rent because you have a scorpion problem. No, you peed on our carpet, so.
Yeah.
So, Karen, we've been hearing a lot of stories in the news about travelers being stranded, either by, like, the traveling company that shuts down, or they're on a cruise ship where, you know, the route of the cruise isn't what they expected, or the conditions on the ship aren't what they expected. What's any recourse a traveler who feels that they've not, you know, gotten their money's worth on a trip have.
Yeah. You know, the issue of the cruise ship, I did see that story. But if you read the fine print of your cruise materials, it says we can change routes, we can change stops, we can omit stops. It depends on, you know, what happens. It depends on the weather. And there is no recourse. Actually, sometimes they have some recourse where they say you're entitled to certain credits if we don't do this, or credits toward another cruise. But you must read the fine print, because when you sign those things and when you pay your money, it's a contract, and it's a binding contract. And frankly, you don't have a lot of good rights when it comes to this stuff.
Stephen, Mary, you got anything? Let me know. In the meantime, let me fly through a couple of texts here. Texter writes, I'm legally deaf and going to be laid off by a major banking corporation. Do I have any rights?
Well, if they're laying you off because of your disability, then yes. If it's just because they're laying people off and you're just one of them, no, they're entitled to do that. So you don't have a right to a job. You don't have a right to be treated fairly, but you do have a right not to be discriminated based upon your disability.
Texture from the 708. Can a municipality be sued by homeowners for not upholding their responsibility of property maintenance code and ordinances resulting in declining neighborhood and property values? If not, what's the recourse?
That's really hard. It's hard to sue a city. They have what we call partial immunity. So you have to prove more than just negligence. You have to prove intentional conduct. I don't know how you would have standing to sue a city for not keeping up the property. That would be an issue as well. And frankly, paying a lawyer hundreds of dollars an hour to do that probably isn't the way to go. The way to go would probably be a political route, right? That doesn't make sense from a legal standpoint to use the courts to do that.
One more, 331. I paid child support for my daughter. I recently got promoted, make more money. I tried to make a bigger payment to my ex. However, my job says they need court documents. My ex refuses to go back to court to get the agreement modified. Is this a problem down the road?
No, it isn't, because unfortunately, in our system, your child support is in a court order. If you get a new job and you are making more money, you don't have to pay more support unless and until the payee goes back to court to get a modification. Same thing if you lose a job or you have you get a cut in pay. That doesn't mean you can automatically stop paying or pay less. You have to go back to court and get a modification. So if the court order says you pay $200 a month and you're making more that you would normally pay more, you're fine to pay $200. You're following the law, and you don't need to do that. Morally, if you want to do that, good for you. But do it voluntarily. You can do it right out of your pocket. You don't have to have your employer do it as a withholding. I think that's what he's referring to, that he has his money taken out automatically, but the employer can't do that without a legitimate court order.
And Karen has taught me in the past, document everything. Karen Conti, phone number at your office.
312-332-7800, and my very special WGN email is wgn@askkarenconti.com.
It's Karen Conti, Sunday nights. All right, we're back in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
We're told that the president's going to be calling any second now. You know, Trump, he calls in, well, about once a week, the Trumpster. And he's got so much going on, I don't even know where to begin.
I thought he was calling your cell phone earlier.
Now he's got the super secret, double secret hotline number here.
The bat phone.
Yeah, the one that only he knows. Well, a couple people know. Engineer Bob and him. Those are the only ones that
actually
know.
Later loser.
Well, speaking of.
Later loser.
This is the ringtone he's chosen
later
for
loser.
Me.
Later loser.
All right, okay, I got it. Good morning, Mr. President. Whoa, what a week you're having.
You know, today is a great day, Cochran. You know, any other American president would have been impeached 86 scandals ago. But here I am, stronger than ever. Let's do this.
Well, okay, let's start. So your daughter Tiffany turned 26 over the weekend. Big party, I'm assuming?
Okay, first of all, I don't appreciate the sarcasm in your voice when you ask me that, Cochran. And not that it's any of your business, but yes, we threw Teresa...
Tiffany...
A really nice surprise party. What we did was we found out when she was still coming, going to come home. We all hid, and that was it. She never found us. As a matter of fact, we're still hiding from her. Her birthdays are so much fun, Cochran. They really are. Family's very important to me, no matter how irrelevant they are. And while Ivanka's the apple of my eye, Tiff Tiffany's the onion of my digestive system.
Oh, it's so sweet. Really is. It's no secret who your favorites are, sir.
Hey, really quick, can I wish all the hosers up in Canada a happy belated Canadian Thanksgiving?
You just did.
I don't know why they call it Thanksgiving on Monday, because it's Columbus Day. We celebrate Thanksgiving in November, idiots. I mean, really, Canadian Thanksgiving is sad. They don't have Indians. They don't have pilgrims. It's way too cold. In fact, this year, instead of a turkey, their parliament officially pardoned one of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's blackface incidents.
Oh, okay.
So sad. Hey, you know how they do socialist Thanksgiving dinner up there in Canada?
No.
Everybody only gets one slice of pumpkin pie, no Cool Whip. None. Socialism is evil. Really is.
Well, you start bringing in pie to that. I guess I can't argue. Listen, another Democratic presidential debate last night at CNN. Anderson Cooper, the lead moderator. Did you watch? How do you think it went? Give me something.
Did I watch? In the words of everybody who has a television in this country, no. No, actually, I did watch a little bit. And how about that Anderson Cooper moderating? Now, don't think for a second that I didn't catch him giving Pete Buttigieg those come-hither glances all night. It was obvious. He should be ashamed of himself. Mayor Pete's a married man, for God's sake.
Well, you certainly know how to keep your standards and inform others. Now, did you like seeing on the debate stage any of the particular candidates?
Well, it was kind of nice to see that cute Hawaiian chick up there, Don Ho's daughter. What's her name? Chelsea Gifford?
Yeah. It's Tulsi Gabbard, sir.
Those are two horrible names, Mike. Sounds like you're saying Chelsea with a speech impediment. It really does.
You're so right, sir.
I know I'm right, Mike. Let's see, who else? Oh, Beto O'Rourke. You know, he was waving his arms so much when he talked, I think he tore a rotator cuff. And Kamala Harris spent a lot of her time correcting people on how to pronounce Kamala. I think Andrew Yang offered America a free set of steak knives last night, too.
I don't know. We've done some fact-checking. The steak knives isn't true, sir.
And can we just stop it already with all these goofy people who have no chance of becoming the nominee? I mean, drop out for all already, okay? And that means you, Cory Booker. You know, with that lazy eye of his, I could tell if he was looking into camera one or camera two.
It's just mean today. Senator Amy Klobuchar seemed to kind of pump things up a little bit with her performance. Don't you agree?
Amy Klobuchar? What's she pulling at, like -3%? What an exciting woman she is. So much charisma. She has that amazing substitute teacher hairdo combined with that thick ankle sex appeal of Crooked Hillary.
Wow. Did you not get enough sleep?
Only 4 hours.
What do you think of the front runners, sir? The center three. You're Bernie, you're Warren, you're Biden.
Well, I will tell you, Crazy Bernie did very good. And by very good, I mean he made it through the entire thing without flatlining. And Pocahontas, now, she didn't even try a rain dance behind the podium to set up the sprinkler system as a distraction. I give her a lot of credit. Could have got the attention off the others.
Well, I notice you haven't mentioned Joe Biden, your archenemy.
All I see when I look at Sleepy Joe now, Cochran, is a late-stage Bob Barker when I look at him. Okay? I don't know if he's going to make it to the showcase showdown, if you know what I mean.
Mr. President, did you happen to see the interview with Hunter Biden on ABC yesterday? Took a shot at your son, Don Jr., calling him Prince Humperdink. What do you think?
You know, if anyone thinks they can insult the Trumps, they're dead wrong. Dead wrong. I'm the only one that can call my kids names, Cochran, and my weaselly greaseball of a son knows it. I love Donnie completely conditionally, believe me. But look, this Hunter Biden is so corrupt. And not only with the Ukraine gas company job, I actually heard he skims a little off the top on every one of his daughter's Girl Scout cookie sales.
That's not good.
Such a criminal. Hunter just rubs me the wrong way. I can't help it. Instead of sitting on boards of foreign companies, he should be doing those Trivago commercials. He's a dead ringer. Bottom line is, I dislike Hunter about as much as I dislike getting my hair wet, eating rare steak, and fidelity. I really do.
That may be the most truthful thing you ever said. Now, your personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, is under investigation by the feds for his work in the Ukraine. Should Rudy be concerned at this point?
Rudy, no colludi? Not at all. Rudy's MAGA all the way, making attorneys get attorneys again. Look, this is so ridiculous. The feds can't prove anything. And frankly, I don't see how they could. I mean, Rudy hasn't said one coherent thing on television or in person the entire time I've been president. So best of luck to the Southern District of New York on this. They're going to need it. In all fairness, nobody's had a tougher week than Rudy. If he was treated any more unfairly, he'd be playing for the Detroit Lions. That I can tell you.
Well, we're going to quickly run out of time here, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention maybe the most important topic of all. Sean Spicer, Dancing with the Stars, said he's lost 17 pounds since he started the show. How do you think he looks?
Oh, now he looks absolutely fantastic. You know, that beautiful natural spray tan glow. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a shame, though. If it wasn't for that pesky male pattern baldness, and if he lost another 50 pounds, he might actually start to look like me.
You do have a mirror, don't you, sir? Look, I believe Spicer dances. We dress like Woody from Toy Story.
Now, there are two words that shouldn't go together, Spicer and Woody.
Listen, we gotta cut it off there. Well, that's a poor choice on my part. We'll leave it there, sir, as always. Thank you for calling in, President Trump.
Later, loser.
Yeah, I saw that coming. Yeah, it's the old later loser. So, boy, he was mean today. Mean.
A little grumpy.
Just mean.
Well, even to his own son.
Right?
Yeah, and his daughter. Donnie. Daughter, too.
Doesn't know her name?
Teresa.
All right, it's 7:21. There's a good story of somebody stepping up and stepping in. If you go back to 9/11, one of the enduring things that came out of 9/11 was what happened on Flight 93. And, you know, all of us said, if there are grown, able-bodied men and women on a plane where that ever happens again, that will never have an achievable goal because people will step up and do what they have to. But have you ever asked yourself, what would you do if you're on a bus, you're on a train, or you're walking down the street and you see a crime committed? Do you step in to help the victim? Do you try to ignore it, walk away? Do you at least call 911? That's one of those life-testing moments, right?
Absolutely.
Nobody wants to be a part of it, but there's one guy that did the right thing, and I mean to the next level. And he is, we're trying to get him on the show this morning, by the way. He is I don't know if he's a tourist or he's in town on business, a Boston man named Jean-Paul LaPierre. He caught a blue line train Sunday morning to the Chicago Marathon, and he heard someone was robbing people on the train. He said, I don't like people that strike fear in people like that. I don't like bullies. Man boarded the train about 5:50 in the morning, showed a handgun to passengers, demanded their money. This is in the 5800 block of North Cumberland. He was very quietly robbing people. LaPierre said, I went up to the front and said to him, give me the gun. And we started fighting for the gun. How about that?
The guy had a gun?
Yeah, he'd open his coat, show a gun, and say, give me your money. With all the adrenaline in his system, LaPierre said he wasn't thinking about getting shot when he approached the armed robber. Once I got a few feet from him, I knew he wasn't going to be able to react fast enough to shoot me. I was going nuts, said. When I see someone pull a gun, it makes me angry. It makes me really, really angry, said LaPierre. LaPierre said he managed to pry the gun away from the man and was holding onto it with his right hand while maintaining a firm grip on the robber with his left. Have we seen a picture of this guy? He must be a big dude.
I would think. I mean...
Man in front of me said he could put the safety on, so I handed him the gun. He put the safety on and walked it out of the train. At that point, I was alone on the train with the guy, and I had no more weapon. I kept telling him, if you move, I'm going to knock you out. He said, I'm going to hit you 7 times in 3 seconds. I don't know why the numbers matter, but I'm glad he was angry. After that, the man calmed down and waited for the police. Officers told the man to get on his stomach. But when he instead laid on his back, LaPierre ran to him and flipped him over like a hamburger. Tremaine Anderson, age 30, was arrested and charged with unauthorized use of a weapon. And LaPierre said he was in town to run the marathon. Said it's not the first time he stepped into the role of Good Samaritan. He said he once helped rescue a boy from a vehicle crash in Boston a few years ago. And he also tracked down a missing python in Newton, Massachusetts. This dude's a superhero.
Wow. Well,
there's a video of it. Online.
Of which?
Of it happening. Of him disarming the man.
Oh, okay. Is he a big guy?
The guy looks bigger than he is.
He said, I've been involved in a lot of things. I just seem to be at the right place at the right time is what people tell me. Look, I don't know anything about this guy. I just know I like him. This guy's stepping up.
So after all that, he ran the marathon?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And it looks like there's people kind of sitting in the... train.
Now, what I don't know, and this is a Sun-Times story by Emmanuel Camarillo, I don't know if the people got their money back, whatever money he stole, because it sounds like the people got off the train as fast as they possibly could. So I don't know how you would track them down.
Yeah.
But whatever money he stole, I'm sure Mr. Whatever his name is didn't take it to jail with him.
So the robber is taller.
Right.
But he looks strong.
Yeah, he does look very... He looks really muscular. Yeah. Like he's kind of pinning him up against the train doors.
And plus, he's from Boston.
I'm also...
And driving around Boston will make you angry.
But I'm also not sure that everybody on the train is aware of what's happening either, because there's people sitting there.
You would think so, at that point, he's got the guy.
Right.
Other people would jump up and kind of help him.
But
texters are saying now, it's from the 219, guy's a former Golden Gloves boxer, has a black belt in karate.
Yeah. He looks like
the part.
He sure does.
And he was finished sketching this guy. He went and ran the marathon, his 12th.
Wow. He looks tough as nails, that guy.
It's a cool dude. We like him. Anyway, we're trying to track him down.
I had a friend who had a phone stolen on the train, and nobody came to help her. Like, she was asking for help.
Yeah, look, there's a risk, obviously.
Right.
But I would not be able to live with myself.
Right.
If I saw you on a train being mugged or robbed, and I just sat there. I couldn't do it. So, you know, you don't know until you know, but this guy, apparently, listen, it's a long name for a superhero, but if you need help, put the something signal in the sky and Jean-Paul Lapierre will be there to help you.
I think he needs to move here.
Jean-Paul. Right?
Yeah, he should just go major city to major city fighting crime.
Just ride a CTA all day long. That'll do it.
Exactly. So hopefully we'll get him on before it shows up today. 727. All right, we're going to come back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Back on the program here at 7:38, and got some great guests in studio. Doug Gerald's here from the Gerald Auto Group. My friend Ryan Dowd, executive director of Hassett House, and we're all going to talk about tie to the Blackhawks and what Hassett House does and things of that nature. Let's start with you, Doug. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me here today.
We're just talking off the air about the Gerald Auto Group. Business is good, I hope.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And what was your first job in the car business? Were you a lot boy?
I was a sales consultant, actually, at a car dealership out in California, at a Toyota store away from the family.
Usually, you start as a lot kid. You're the kid running and getting the cars and washing the cars and all that stuff. How'd you avoid that?
I just was persistent and found the right fit. So, yeah.
The Gerald Auto Group locations are everywhere. We'll get to those in just a second. Tell me about this goals program that you've been involved with the Blackhawks for a while.
Yeah, this is our sixth year now, and our organization has looked to, you know, has been involved with a lot of different charities around Chicago, and I wanted to try to find a way to bring some awareness to the organizations that we are supporting, and I thought that donating for every Blackhawks goal would be a good way to get name recognition out. I know that Ryan doesn't have an advertising budget.
Right.
Get people aware, asking questions about different organizations. So we've done Lurie Children's Hospital, Little Friends in Naperville, Living Well, but Hassett House is an organization that I keep coming back to because what Ryan does is incredible, and the need for ending homelessness is never going away, unfortunately.
Sure.
But Ryan does it one person at a time, and the change that he makes in people's lives is permanent.
It's goals for charity, and again, it's $100 for every goal?
Yeah, $100.
Okay. So what we'd like to see is lights out from Kaner and Assad and everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
More money, the better. And Taves, of course. Ryan, lean into that microphone. You and I have known each other for a long time, and you know that my brother,
Mickey,
was homeless for a period of time. He's actually spoken at one of your events.
He did. He was fantastic.
Yeah, and he made fun of me, which I know you enjoyed.
He did. It was good.
But here's the thing. You taught me stuff that I didn't know in regards to homelessness. Like at any given time, you've got families at Hassett House. They're going to get up and go to work or get up and get the kids off to school. They're just at a point in their life where they don't have a home.
Yeah, we typically have anywhere between 40 and 50 children in the building on any given night.
And these kids let's break down the main stereotype. Everybody thinks homeless, it's some dude that got involved with drugs. It's a guy that's an alcoholic. I mean, it's somebody that's whacked, somebody that's got, PTSD they can't control. Look, there's a portion of the homeless population that has those kinds of problems. But we got to drop all those other stereotypes if we're really serious about beating this problem.
Absolutely. We just had, I was looking at a report of individuals who'd moved out of the shelter recently, and I saw a six-month-old who moved out of the shelter with his mother. I mean, you don't think of a six-month-old when you're thinking of homelessness.
But how good does that make you feel?
Well, it's good that he's moving out. It's horrible that six-month-olds are ever homeless.
Right, but that's the point. With Hassett House, what I've seen you do is you are changing people's lives because you're teaching them how to take care of themselves in a way that they can and get them back on their feet.
Absolutely. And a lot of it is what you focused on earlier about how there's just so many different needs within the homeless community and trying to meet all of those. You know, some people need some job training. Somebody else needs some mental health counseling. Somebody else needs some substance abuse counseling or whatever. And so we try to offer everything that anybody would need to help them get back on their feet again.
And Doug, you know this, but one of the cool things you've done in the design is I don't want to make it sound trite, but it's a mall setup of sorts where all the excuses are broken down, right? So everybody goes, oh, it's such a hassle. I got to go to this building. Then I got to go to that building. Then I go to this building. Job training and substance abuse counseling, emotional counseling, medication and health, the closer those are together, the better, right?
Yeah, we have it's a one-stop shop. It's basically, yeah. Kind of like a mall for nonprofits all in one place. We have a full medical clinic with a doctor, a legal clinic with a couple lawyers, and then the counseling and everything else. Again, all in one place and all working together. So it's very much coordinated care versus fractured care between organizations spread out around across several miles.
How'd you get into this?
I was afraid you're going to ask that. So when I was 13.
Would you like me to retract the question?
No, it's too late. You already put it out in the universe. I was 13, and I was in Sunday school class, and they passed around a sign-up sheet to volunteer at this local organization called Hesed House that I'd never heard of. And I didn't know anything about it, but I did see the sign-up sheet had all the girls from class and none of the boys from class.
There you go.
And I liked those odds. And so I went thinking I could get
a nothing
date.
Wrong with that.
It's how a lot of good things start in
this
world.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, there's a lot of upside to that story. You went away for a bit, but you were drawn back. I know you went to D.C. for a job, but you came back to run it again. And, yeah, and by the way, I know you're not in this for the money.
We call it my sabbatical. Moved to D.C. for a couple of years to do some international human rights work, and ultimately got a phone call from Hesed House asking me to come back. And I don't know how much you know about D.C., but it's not the most pleasant place to live. And so
you've heard the show. I feel like I know a lot. Yeah. Yes.
So coming back to the Midwest, coming back to Hesed House was really it was kind of cool to come back to my dream job that I'd had before. It was very meaningful to me.
And Doug, when did you become aware of Hesed House?
I would say about 6 or 7 years ago, not too long before I started the Goals for Charity with Blackhawks. And the mall campus setup that Ryan has is absolutely one of the things that has pledged my commitment to Hesed House.
Sure.
Because it's clear that there is an incredible amount of care and sophistication that goes into the treatment for each individual to make sure that they don't come back. And it's not a one-time fix. It's not a safety net that people come to be reliant upon.
Sure.
He's looking to truly fix the lives of one person at a time. It's incredible. If you've never had an opportunity to go visit.
Yeah, you can tour it.
Yeah, tour it.
You can tour
it. Absolutely.
That's where you really get a sense of this, G.
Just incredible, because it's such a complex problem, especially with funding dwindling on the federal level and the state level as well. So I can only imagine just how complex the issues are, and that often you probably have folks coming back to the Hesed House, right?
Yeah, some people come back. We work really hard to help people need to come back to us.
Yeah.
First by helping them have the skills they need when they move out, but then also working with them after they move out so they don't have to come back.
Yeah, it's just not an easy fix at all.
It's not. We actually, as a country, are getting better at homelessness. It may not feel that way, but we're actually getting better as a country at figuring out what works to get people out of homelessness. And the biggest shift in our mindset as a industry, for lack of a better term, is stopped trying to find the solution to homelessness,
right?
And we're looking for the solutions to homelessness. And once you start breaking it down into kind of micro responses targeted towards specific subpopulations, all of a sudden, actually, we can move the needle on this issue.
There have been some great things that have happened in the past couple of years just in regards to shining the light on homelessness and breaking down some of these stereotypes. And talk about the movie that was made.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, last time I was in the studio was with you and Emilio. So Emilio Estevez made a movie a couple of years back about libraries and homeless individuals in libraries. And I had just released a book about homelessness in libraries. And so I got a Facebook friend request from him. I thought it was a buddy messing with me, but it wasn't. It was Emilio. And that led to some phone calls, that led to hanging out with him at Santa Barbara Film Festival, which ultimately led to a 25-city tour to promote the movie with him, which was really exciting, not just to get to run around the country with a movie star, but also get
And by the way, a really good guy.
Really, really good guy. He's the
real
deal.
Just a genuine
good
deal.
Absolutely real deal.
Yeah.
But also to get to use this platform of this movie to shine a spotlight, to help educate the country. We did Q&As all around the country to help people understand this issue at a much deeper level and realize that we can end homelessness in our country. Yeah. We need to have enough political will to do so.
And where do we get the book?
The book, Amazon, or Amazon's probably the best place.
Yeah. And is it as simple as libraries are open and I need a place to get out of the weather and the rain and whatever?
That's certainly part of it. But libraries are also everything that homelessness is not. You know, homelessness is fairly boring. Libraries have lots of resources to keep you interested. Libraries are relatively... People are not packed on top of each other. There's a decent amount of space. Homeless shelters are really, really crowded. Homeless shelters are really, really loud. Libraries are much quieter. It's a break from being homeless when you go into a library.
Yeah. More in a moment with both of these fine gentlemen.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Coming up, the hero we mentioned earlier, Jean-Paul LaPierre, smacking around a bully on the blue line and stopping a guy from mugging everybody on the train. Got to hear from this guy. I'm glad he's not live. He might punch me. He seems flinchy, but that guy's a hero. In studio, Doug Gerald from the Gerald Auto Group and Ryan Dowd, Executive Director of Hesed House. This is all a part of the Goals for Charity program presented by WGN Radio, and specifically, Doug's group has decided this year we've got to step up for Hesed House. Is that a everybody gets a vote thing, or how did that work when you come to the decision?
Yeah, well, we try to select organizations that we know are going to be around for a long time.
Sure.
And so there's four or five that we consider every year, but
make the money do the most good.
In some form or fashion, we've been involved with Hesed House since I met Ryan.
Yeah.
So whether it's
he's hard to say no to,
it's hard to say no to. But yeah. You know, you go and you see the organization, and it's hard to say no to supporting an organization that's as thorough and complete and thoughtful as Hesed House is. Oh yeah, it's the best.
A couple of texters here. 815, you sound great on the radio, Doug. Keep up the great work. It's John at the Collision Center. I guess must be an old pal of yours or something. 630, Morton College Library is going to be screening The Public. That's the movie. On November 20th, donations are accepted and given to local homeless shelter there, and we are located in Cicero. We need everybody to step up and do that. All right, so a couple of questions that come up, just general perceptions about homelessness, Ryan Dowd. We got all this food we throw out every day in this country. This is one of the great restaurant cities in the world. And I get asked this all the time. Why can't the restaurants be able to accumulate the food, have a delivery service of some sort, and help the shelters out?
Many do. At Hesed House, we serve hundreds of thousands of meals a year, and we buy almost no food. Because there's a lot of generosity, and it's a lot of corporate companies, a lot of restaurants being very, very generous.
So there's no specific law against it?
No. In fact, there's laws protecting from liability. If you're a restaurant mm-hmm. and you donate the food, if there happens to be some problems with that food, there's some liability protection.
And it goes to how you help that's not maybe cash related, too. Do you guys use volunteers for everything?
Only about 9,000, yeah.
Wow, that's a huge operation.
But you need 9,004, so we're going to need people to step up. Yes.
The vast majority of the work we do is being done by people who are there because they want to be there. They're not collecting a paycheck. They're there to volunteer.
Well, Steve is talking about stereotypes, and I think a lot of people assume that homelessness is something that doesn't affect or couldn't affect somebody they know. But when you hear the statistics of how many people and families, especially, are living paycheck to paycheck or because of health issues, hospital bills,
sure.
that could throw them into immediate homelessness. Can you give us some examples or stories of a family or someone that's really touched your heart?
Yeah, the ones that are the hardest for me are always when it's the single mothers with the kids. You got mm-hmm. little kids, and little kids, a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, should just never be in a homeless shelter ever. And when I say that we have 40 or 50 kids in the building a night, most of those are under the age of 5. Because what happens is, let's say you've got children and you've got a 16-year-old and you have to go live at a shelter. Usually that 16-year-old's going to go stay with family member, a friend, somebody else.
Yeah.
But you got a 4-year-old. That 4-year-old's coming with you. And so what you end up with in the shelters is tons and tons of little kids and very few junior high schoolers and high schoolers because they're off with somebody else, which is its own kind of trauma, right? You know, your mom or dad's going living at the shelter and you're living with a family member and you're separated, which is hard. But it also beats the alternative of having those kids in the shelter. And so and you get a family in and you think, particularly a single mom with little kids, you're thinking, how the heck are you going to find daycare for your two kids and the job skills you need and get back into feeding and find an apartment where the three of you can live. And you know right out of the gate that this is not going to be a quick fix, because the barriers between her and that family getting back on their feet again, they're big, and it's mm-hmm. going to take a little time, and it's going to take some work. But we're in this for the long haul, and so whatever it takes, and if we can get it out in a week, that's awesome. If it takes 3 weeks, that's okay too. If it takes a year, we're going to be there for you. If it takes longer, we're going to stand by you.
I mean, single moms, I imagine, are vulnerable for a variety of reasons, but is there one that you find overall that throws, you know, just sort of is the straw that breaks the camel's back? Is somebody not paying child support? Like, what is happening usually in a single mom's life?
Well, there's a few things. One is child care is really expensive. Second is housing costs more because you need a bigger place. But then probably the biggest one is it's really hard to get and hold a job when you don't have that support behind you to watch your kids. So if your child gets sick and now you got to take a day off from
Absolutely.
Work, you're not maybe not getting paid, and B, you might be losing your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so the what it takes to support that family when there's only a mother who may not be making very much in the first place,
right.
It's difficult.
It's GeraldAuto.com, HessedHouse.org, and it's Goals for Charity. I'm going to give you the last word here, Doug. What do you want people to know that we haven't covered, or anything else you want to add?
Well, we got the model year kickoff going right now. Lots of new models. It's
right.
A lot of fun. October of 2019 is when we released the 2020s, so that's fun.
So it's coming up, big fall ahead.
Yeah, great fall.
Yep, and the more money that my friend Doug gets here, the more money he's going to give to Ryan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a win-win.
Excellent, thank you.
So, anyway, great to see you. Congratulations to you. You told us you just got married recently.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And the lovely lady's name?
Jessica.
Jessica, good morning to you as well. I assume she's listening so she can critique your performance.
She set an alarm, so hopefully she found the radio.
And Ryan, God bless you, man. Everything you guys do over there, and to your lovely wife and family and the daughter who thinks you're a nerd, all of the folks that you work with, congratulations.
Thanks, brother.
All right. It is 7:57. We're coming back. Steve Grzanich will be in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Well, he's there right now. I'm going to do the news here in just seconds. Unless you're not up to it, Steve. You're feeling better today.
Yeah, I'm feeling better, and I'm very up to it. So,
and coming up, the hero of the blue line, Jean-Paul LaPierre, will join Dean and me in just a few moments. Nice job, Viv, getting him out and tracking him down and all that. But it is news time now on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Guess it's true, I'm not good at all.
All right, 10 now. We have a hero, and I don't mean you, Dean, and it's certainly not me. Do you know about this hero?
I have been marveling at the story of the guy who was on the L train. The guy was in Chicago for the marathon.
Right.
He's on the L train, and he sees somebody with a gun. Who's, you know, mugging people, and he disarms the guy, goes up and takes control of the situation.
We want this guy to be known even more than he already is, because apparently he's a star back home as well. Boston's own Jean-Paul LaPierre, who joins us now. Good morning, sir.
Hi, how you doing?
Thanks for doing what you did, man. I saw the video. You are one brave stand-up dude, and I respect that.
Thank you. I love Chicago. Chicago always have a special place in my heart, you know. It's my home away from home.
So, Jean-Paul, what's going through your mind as you're sitting there and watching what's going on? What's going through your mind?
So fast. I was angry. I became really, you know, I don't like people that prey on people, and I just thought it was, you know, unbelievable. I can understand people not wanting to help because the guy did have the gun. So I don't blame people for not helping. I don't have any anger. I don't have any kind of thing like that for that situation, because I can understand it. That, you know, I realized what I was doing. I realized what my concern was. I had to get close to that guy, and I had to get close to him fast. Okay, and when I got up to him, I knew that if I could get close enough to that guy, that if he made a flinch, I would knock him out in one punch.
And by the way, knock him out in one punch, Dean. He means that. This guy's a Golden Gloves boxer.
Mm. I boxed for a couple of years when I was in my teens, but I had always fought. I got in a lot of fights as a kid, and growing up, I got in a lot of trouble. I mean, I wasn't always an innocent kid.
Jean-Paul, can you describe what was happening? Like, what did you see and how did you first notice it? Because it seemed like there were people seated on the train.
Yeah, and he was like
it.
The whispering mugger. Yeah, he was quiet.
Yeah, it was strange because he was all the way at the front of the train, and I saw with another guy, and like the other guy was at the door a little closer to us. He kept like sticking his head into the train, this other guy. And then the big guy that I took down, he was way at the front of that train, and like he looked like he was going person to person, bumming change. But then all of a sudden, when the train came to the stop, the Cumberland stop, everybody that was in the back that I was sitting with, and we were all just kind of talking, but they kind of became quiet, and then they got off the train fast. I'm like the only one sitting in the back of the train. So I got out because I thought, well, maybe they know of another train coming to go faster. So I don't know what's going on. So I got out, and I said to the guy, why didn't anybody get out? I said, we got three or four more stops got to go. And they're like, there's a guy on the front of the train. He's robbing people. I said, yeah? And they're like, yeah, with a gun. I'm like, he has a gun. I said, I didn't see a gun. They're like, no, he has a gun. I said, he's in his right hand. He's walking around with a gun up there. So I went, I said, okay. I said, I just got mad. I just got mad. And I one thing that went through my mind is I'm not going to watch this. I'm always telling people, sometimes, don't be afraid to take a chance. And if you think you can do something, not to take a stupid chance and get shot in the head.
Right.
But I felt that I had enough confidence in my skills to be able to get up close to him enough that I knew that if I could just get close, that I'd be able to take control of him. I knew I'd be able to come. Once I got my hand on him, when I felt my grip, my strength, and his body weight, then I knew that
the phone is going nuts. You guys talk to him off the air until we can get him back. Dean, the amazing thing was, you've seen the video, he's shorter than the guy that was doing the mugging. Yeah, the guy's doing the mugging is a big dude.
Guy, yeah.
And he's holding the guy. He's got the guy forearm pressed against like the door of the train with his fist back. Like, at any given time, I'm going to knock you out. Any number of bad things could have happened.
I don't know. I mean, you have to ask yourself, what would you do in a situation like that? If you saw something like that going on, I guess if you had, special skills like Jean-Pierre does, and you feel confident that you could overpower the guy, but in my mind, I would go, is this worth possibly getting shot? Is it worth a gun going off and maybe an innocent bystander being shot, somebody being shot? Is it, or do you just, push the guy off the train?
It's the ultimate question. What do you do? When you get into a situation like that, what do you do?
The other thing that happens when you're riding on the train is that a lot of people are just, their faces are buried in their phones,
yeah.
And there's a lot of people floating in and out. There are a lot of folks selling things or like bumming change. So sometimes you don't even know what's really going on around you.
Well, imagine trying to process a live string of muggings going on as well. I think the phone's back. All right, John Paul, we're not going to keep you forever here, but we did want to thank you. And of course, one of the most important questions is: did you make it to the marathon? And what was your time?
My time was terrible. I mean, I'm an unofficial runner. I usually buy numbers from different people and send. I'm an unofficial runner. I just run to run. I'm about 5.5 hours. I'm not. I tend to run in when I see people having. Thing, I go up to them and it was my 43rd marathon that I've run in my life, and so I tend to feel like an MC of a marathon. I go, and if I see people having trouble, then I try to give them advice
the
on how to finish.
Yeah, you're the cheerleader. Did you say
cheerleader? I'm the on-field cheerleader.
Did you say 43rd?
Yeah, I've done 20 Bostons in a row. I've done 12. This was my 12th Chicago in a row, and then I'll do New York in another month. I'll do my 12th New York in a row.
You got family?
Yes, I do, sir. Yeah, I just got married a month ago for the first time.
Oh, hey, congratulations.
Yeah. A stepdaughter and a stepson, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm very lucky. It's actually a funny story. I carried the cake topper. I was a pastry chef for over 30 years. So if you Google my name and put pastry, you'll see some things about me. But
ooh.
I carried the cake topper that I bought in one of the first pastry shops I worked in back in 1988. I carried that for 31 years because I liked it and I wanted it on my cake. So finally I got to put it on after 31 years.
You romantic hero, you.
I bet you are a handful,
though. If you get a chance, there's a book that's been written about me about another incident I did. It's called Flying the Talk. It's written by Griffin Van Gilder. It just came out in Amazon, but it's about an incident that I was involved with around 25 years ago. And to put it to you in a nutshell, a woman lost a big manuscript 25 years ago in the snow, and this was before social media. I spent 4.5 months tracking her down. I tracked her down and returned her book, and then she ended up writing about it in a book, plus a bunch of other incidents that I've been involved with her are written in the book.
You said Flying the Talk.
Flying the Talk by Griffin Van Gilder. The first chapter starts off with my name, Jean-Paul Lapierre, and it talks about me, but it's fiction based on some fact.
Well, that's pretty cool. Everybody get in. Group hug for Jean-Paul. Come on, get in here.
Oh, big
get
hug!
In here. Come on, man. Come on.
Hey, listen, I will be back to Chicago for that sentencing. I'm writing an impact statement, and I'm hoping that I'm invited to be there to read it to that.
You're also
that
invited in studio, man. If you get back, let us know. Hold on before you hang up, and all of our producers talk to you so we can stay in touch.
Okay, yes, sir.
All right, thanks, Bill. That's great.
It's a good thing he wasn't standing near the guy who, you know, fired the starter pistol for the for the marathon.
God, that guy's got like 9 lives. He's got more it's chapters
unbelievable.
In his life.
That's a very interesting guy.
That's a lot happening.
Unpeel that onion.
It says in the write-up on the book, Jean-Paul Lapierre is ready to find love after a decade spent playing the role of a carefree bachelor.
I'm telling you, that's why I said he sounds like a handful. Right? Could you imagine being married to him?
Wow.
He has so much energy.
No, he's standing behind you at a 7-Eleven. The front guy doesn't have any change. I'll take care of this.
I know.
I am Jean-Paul.
Somebody loses a script, or
right, he's digging through the snow in Boston,
and then he spends 4 months trying to.
It's unbelievable.
Now he does all of this good, but in the running world, he's known as a bandit, someone who runs marathons without always registering. Right. So
we paid the person that had the number.
Absolutely.
So. He's a cheerleader. Come on.
Coming up, Jennifer Aniston, Gina Rodriguez, one of Dean's former wives, and Christie's Chicago auction preview, amongst other things, when we come back, and we'll give you a little more on entertainment.
He's not a Bears player, but he makes the cut. How Lawrence Funk won the spot at Hallis Hall for a shave and a haircut. Tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Dean, stand by. We have breaking news out of the newsroom with Steve Grzanich.
Steve, the Chicago Public Schools will be closed tomorrow. The mayor, in a news conference right now with CPS CEO Janice Jackson, say they have canceled classes tomorrow. No after-school activities. All of the other things related to school tomorrow will be canceled because, as the mayor says, it has become crystal clear that the teachers intend to go on strike tomorrow, and they want to give parents plenty of opportunity to make plans now and get ready for tomorrow. So no school tomorrow at Chicago Public Schools, and it looks like a strike will happen. Talks are scheduled today, so there is still a little bit of hope, but it certainly sounds like the mayor is preparing for the worst.
I say this as a union member, Dean, and I know you're a union member as well. There's an inherent selfishness and self-centeredness to going down to the wire on all these negotiations and then having it go this way, where 300,000 Chicago school kids are not going to go to school tomorrow. So hopefully they'll figure it out quickly, but it's disappointing.
And right, and we will have full details, including some comments from the mayor, coming up at 8:30.
Thank you, man. You were saying, dude?
Well, when I was a student in the Chicago...
Couldn't wait for a strike?
I couldn't wait for a snow day or a strike.
Strike, teacher, strike. all right, let's get after some show businesses here. I'm more on entertainment before Jean-Paul comes and pops us both in the mouth. Adelaide, Celebration of Life.
Yeah, this was the little daughter of Miguel and Kelly Cervantes. Miguel, the star of Hamilton here in Chicago, since it's been here. Part of the reason that that Miguel wanted to be in Chicago was because of the excellent health care that his little daughter could get. Since she was 7 months old, suffered from a very severe, very aggressive, very rare form of epilepsy, which claimed her life over the weekend. She was just a few days short of her fourth birthday. A tragic, horrible story. But Miguel and Kelly and Big Brother Jackson announced that there will be a public celebration of life that'll take place at the Harold Washington Library Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, for anyone who is interested in that. They're also saying if anyone wants to make a contribution, that they can do that to the epilepsy organization Cure, with which they've been affiliated for years, Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy. And you can make that in Adelaide's honor.
So that's Sure Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy or Cure?
Cure. Cure.
Okay.
Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy.
Yeah. All right.
And I'm sure of it.
And little Adelaide, well, I mean, it's just a beautiful family. And
I'll tell you
what. That's heartbreaking.
The strength, this family's been very public about her epilepsy for as long as I've known Kelly and Miguel. They're wonderful, sweet people. I mean, as parents, I don't know how you survive something like this, the loss of a child. It's horrible, but they've been very public and very open. And sharing all of their thoughts and, you know, sharing what it's like now that the house is quiet. And, you know, all the medical equipment has been turned off.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I just send them all the love and prayers that I possibly can. They're amazing people. And little Jackson, this whole time, was so sweet and demonstrative with his little sister. You know, it was,
yeah, affectionate and all that.
The whole thing is just so beautiful.
Breaks your heart.
Yep.
Jennifer Aniston broke the internet. What happened?
She went on Instagram. She got on for the first time yesterday. Everyone's been bugging her get on Instagram, and she's, you know, never wanted to bother, which I sort of can understand. But finally, she goes on yesterday. In less than 24 hours, gets 7.2 million followers, and actually broke down the social media platform. She broke Instagram. Yesterday.
Pretty good for a 52-year-old lady.
Yeah. The first thing that she posted...
Or is she older than that maybe now?
I think she's somewhere in that neighborhood. The first thing that she posted, a picture of her TV friends. Lisa Kudrow, Courtney Cox, Matt LeBlanc, David Schwimmer, and Chandler...
Chandler Bing.
I can't think of his
name. No, that's fine.
What's his real name?
Matthew Perry.
No, it's Chandler Bing.
It says she's 50.
No, she's older than that.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I told her I need to see an ID. Dean has information on the most viewed 80s video on YouTube and Gina Rodriguez on TV, but tell me in the next 60 seconds about this Christie Chicago auction.
The big auction house, which is at the John Hancock Center in Chicago, they're previewing some items that are going to go on auction in New York, but it's a very rare opportunity to see up close and personal some things like one of three trumpets that Miles Davis used. One of them is buried with him. One of them the family still owns. And there is this one now that has been put up for auction. It's expected to go for millions of dollars. But you can see it at Christie's for the next few days. They have a Picasso painting that's worth $8 million. They have an Andy Warhol that's worth a couple of million. They have a Frida Kahlo painting, which is worth, I think I read, $10 million, something like that. So I would just go just to, you know, to hang by it and then accidentally spill my cranberry juice on it.
The texter's chiming in about Jean-Paul and his appearance on Moron Entertainment. Love you guys. He's no moron. 815, Liam Neeson has nothing on this guy's particular set of skills.
That's the truth.
And let's see, he's Batman from the 414. He could be. He's Jean-Paul Batman.
Could be Batman.
See you tomorrow.
Bye.
That's Dean Richards, and it is news time right now.
Hey, Ma! Can we get some meatloaf?
Idly-ho, neighborinos.
We need two big pizzas, man. Everything on them.
Hi-ho, neighbor.
Nobody messing in my neighborhood.
Hey, Ma! The meatloaf! We want it now! The meatloaf!
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
And Neighborhood Eats. It's not meatloaf. It's better than that. All right, Jay, who you got for a friend? A brand new best friend today.
My brand new best friend is Sean Podgursky. He is from D-Min Tap. No, not D-Men, but D-Min.
Close,
for,
though.
Yeah, short for donor. It was originally Donor Kebab Food Truck.
Mm-hmm.
We were the Donor Men Food Truck.
Oh, sorry. Donor Men Food Truck.
But on the streets, everyone was like, hey, there's the D-Men. So when we opened the bar, we changed it to the D-Men Tap.
Well, it's a cool name.
And Doner Kebab is a very popular street food in Germany. Mm-hmm. So it's modern German street food. Along with the Doner Kebab is
what do you know from what do you know from street food in Germany when your name's Podgursky? You're a Polish kid.
Well, it's similar. The food is similar, but I had friends in the beer industry.
Okay.
And so we would go over to Germany to look at equipment and hops. Sure.
But Sean was in a band. He and his partner. Many bands. Yes. He really wanted to be the next big Chicago band.
And do you know what his best band was? Sybaris. Did you only play the three locations, the Sybaris locations?
That's it. We were very big on the sexy hotel circuit.
Right, in the pool suite?
Yes.
Yes.
They played Lollapalooza, though, one year. So that's great. You guys did. Yeah.
I did it in a chair. I had a broken foot.
You lived the dream for a bit. You played bass.
And you thought, this is really hard to make a living. I'm going to do something really sensible and get into the restaurant business.
Yes, I'm going to go from a frying pan to a fire.
So you got partners in this?
I do. I have two partners, my two homies.
Did you know how much time was involved in running a restaurant?
No.
You just knew you could eat at them.
We thought with three people it would help to split the tasks.
Nope.
No.
Everybody's got to work all day.
Yeah. It just adds more work. But it's great. I couldn't ask for better people to do it with.
It's a really awesome location. It's definitely a neighborhood place. They have food late until 1 a.m., which is very hard to find.
It's very smart.
12:30 now. We just changed
it. Fine. Well, sorry.
Just changed.
Get there at 12:30.
If you can't eat by midnight, you're not hungry.
But, you know, it's really hard to find, you know, really delicious food later at night. It's a neighborhood spot. Great beer selection. They have great connections with the breweries, local breweries around town as well. And wonderful mead selection, too.
Well, and it's a big deal to have G pick you for neighborhood eats.
I'm very honored.
I thought it was a perfect selection because I was still thinking about everybody and their Lederhosen, right? And Oktoberfest. And I was still craving a really great beer. And I wanted a nice Oktoberfest beer. And I was thinking about German food. And I thought, well, German street food. And this is legitimate. This is in Germany. There are more places that serve currywurst and doner kebab. That's their fast food.
Yeah, they don't. They have way more street food than we have here in Chicago. Chicago doesn't have anything quite like the doner kebab and the currywurst in Germany.
So let's
they're like every other corner.
Let's describe what a doner kebab is.
So doner is the same word as gyro and shawarma. So it's simply to turn. I know I'm doing this, but there's no camera.
No, there's a stream. You're on video. Hey. Yeah,
it's the Turkish word to turn. So it's vertically roasted meat on a spit.
So they layer seasoned meats on a spit, and the beautiful thing is as it turns, the outside gets nice and crispy and crusty and roasty, and the inside is still juicy, and because it's vertical, the juices from the meat actually seasons and baste the meat. So
look
it's similar to a...
You know it.
Similar to a Middle Eastern shawarma as well, if you have one of those.
So what's your favorite on your own menu?
I like the doner box, even though I don't eat them as much as I used to. It's all the stuff that goes on a doner kebab, but we put it over French fries, so it's like loaded fries.
And then
you've lost a bunch of weight. This is not food for a guy that's lost a bunch of weight.
Technically, it's very healthy if you eat it in like the salad form or in the kebab form. Because it's
so
chicken.
It's all about portion control.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what my doctor said.
They source all of their produce and meat locally. The sausage in the currywurst. You want to explain what currywurst is?
So currywurst is, that's the one I'm actually the most proud of because there's not too much currywurst in the United States or Chicago. And that's a white sausage, and you cover it with this tomato curry sauce. And that was that came about after World War II with the British soldiers. They would carry curry packets with them, and the Germans were like, I don't know what this is. And so they mixed it with tomato sauce and poured it over sausage. I know Chicagoans, this sounds a lot like ketchup on a hot dog, but it's totally different. It's not ketchup on a hot dog. And it was a viral sensation before there was an internet. Like, lots of copycats came up. It spread all over the country. So it's really cool to have that, and we get our sausage from a place called Mikowski's on the south side down in Bridgeport, and they're a great company to work with.
It's a fourth generation sausage maker, and it's currently woman owned, so that's really great that you sourced that.
I was in a band called Fourth Generation Sausage Makers. So your day starts when?
Well,
it's not this early.
I have a 5-month-old, so I wake up pretty early. And then I do a lot of the social media, and I'm constantly on my phone working, doing that stuff.
Steve, we have to describe the bar. It is a very cool environment. There's a lot of Dungeons and Dragons artwork. There's a lot of local artwork because they have folks come in and that you can illustrate a coaster, which is then displayed on the coaster wall. And the coasters actually have their own Instagram page as well.
D-Men Tap Coasters.
And there's a back room with pinball machines and vintage video games.
Is there a strategy to the decor, or it's just cool stuff you guys like?
It's cool. It's a constantly evolving bar. Like, we had an idea of what we wanted it to be, and then it didn't be, it wasn't that, and so we kind of like the way it's going now. It's just kind of an amalgamation of all the three owners and what we like and what we believe in.
But I don't want anyone to think that it's all like hard rock and roll and like heavy metal type situation. You guys play all kinds of music and your clientele is very diverse, right?
Very much so.
So what's on your playlist? Describe some of the music.
I mean, I like to think like quirky hits, like music that is just under the radar of being overplayed.
Like Dexy's Midnight Runners. We'll come
play,
on, Eileen.
Yes, we'll play Dexy's Midnight Runners, of course, but a lot of 80s goth and 90s goth and industrial music and some heavy metal, but we also like a lot of pop music. We love 90s like hip hop,
but we don't want to scare away the older folks who love the German street food.
We have a big progressive rock following. We do a Genesis versus Rush versus Yes battle once a year.
Wow.
Big fans.
I'm going to go with Susu Studio the Block. All right, so here's the deal. If you want to get to it, where do they go?
2849 West Belmont.
Hours.
The hours are 5 o'clock till 2 o'clock most days of the week. On weekends, we stay. On Saturdays, we're open till 3 o'clock in the morning. And Friday, Saturday,
Lord.
Sunday, we open for lunch.
And on Wednesday nights, they have Dungeons & Dragons open table night that starts at around 8:30.
Yes.
And then Krampus starts at the beginning of December, and they have a huge Krampus celebration.
Yes, we decorate, instead of Santa Claus, we do the evil European Santa Claus named Krampus.
Right. It was started by a grandfather who had cramps when he stood up too fast. Listen, man, I'm proud of you, and it's lot of work, and I salute you, and I love the fact that G has given places like yours publicity like this.
She's amazing.
Where do we see the piece he wrote?
It's on the suntimes.com website, and also it'll be shared on our WGN website as well.
Good job, bud.
Thank you.
All right, get some sleep.
I will.
Well, appreciate you not dozing off during the interview. It is the Steve Cochran Show, and a ton of people are asking, Steve, and I say, what? So what is that restaurant G was talking about? What's it called again?
It's D-Men. D and then the word M-E-N, men. D-Men Tap. It's in Avondale, 2849 West Belmont Avenue, and it's known for its German street food.
And what did you want people to know about it, too? You seemed like you were wanting to throw a warning out along with a plug.
I just said that, you know, when you first walk in, it feels very like sci-fi, fantasy, heavy metal, the decor, and the ambiance, but once you get in there, you realize even if that's not your scene, the food is fabulous and the people are very welcoming and it's a very diverse crowd.
Is it super loud?
It can be. It depends on whoever. The playlist changes based on whoever's running, you know, behind the bar.
I'm just thinking if I wanted to bring my Uncle Klaus in, would I be intimidated then?
Maybe go in earlier in the evening. But it is a locally owned, it's a mom and pop shop. It's always great when you can support local.
Let's go back to Steve Grzanich. You'll have the news at 9 o'clock. Steve, tell us again, if you would, about the school closing tomorrow in lieu of, even if they get a last-minute settlement, schools are closed tomorrow.
Yes, schools will be closed tomorrow. All after-school activities will be closed tomorrow. But here's the thing. The buildings will be open so that kids can go report to the building where they normally attend school or any school that has the same grade level where they're
at in school. So that's one of the contingency plans. The libraries will be open. The mayor is saying this is going to be an all-hands-on-deck situation to maintain some normalcy for kids. The school lunch program will continue so that kids will get fed. But the mayor and the CPS CEO seem pretty resigned to the fact that there's going to be a teacher strike tomorrow. The House of Delegates earlier saying that they're going to recommend that the teachers walk off the job tomorrow. So it looks like this is going to happen.
And what is our understanding, again, of what the main differences of opinion are? It's not just money, right?
No, it's not just money. As a matter of fact, it's probably more the social services and nurses and staffing. The teachers, the mayor said the teachers have also asked to reduce some of their education time or some of their prep time in the morning. And the mayor says that's a non-starter as well. The mayor accusing the teachers' union of being financially irresponsible, saying the city just doesn't have the billions of dollars that would be needed to kind of pull everything together as is wanted by the teachers in their proposal.
The CTU president's Jesse Sharkey, what's his side of this?
Well, his side of it is that they have, you know, been going back and forth, but that there has been no real movement, that there's not the main issues, according to him, are class sizes and these positions. They want to protect these positions, and there was just absolutely no movement on any of that yesterday.
There's a lot of talk in the public that are against the strike. Well, I guess everybody's against the strike. You would hope even the teachers are against the strike, but are saying that a lot of this is about protecting teachers regardless of whether or not they're doing the job. Is that a myth?
I would say that it is a myth. The teachers want these nurses in the schools. They want every school to have a nurse. They want the library positions filled again. A number of these library positions went away, and some of those teachers were returned to the classrooms. Also, the therapists, the social services in some of these schools are missing. So I think the teachers don't want just money. I think they would be happy with just the pay raises that have been proposed. It's these other things that they want more than that, and they want it in writing, because they feel like they have been promised these things in the past that have never come to fruition.
25,000 teachers, 7,000 support staff members, 300,000 kids would all be affected by this if they don't have a last-minute solution. But again, schools will be closed tomorrow. Where do people find out information where they could send their kids if they don't have daycare or babysitting possibilities?
And they can go to the Chicago Public Schools website, and all of that contingency information is being posted there. And they can follow us on our Twitter account. We've been linking out to some of this as well today at WGNradio.com.
That's Steve Grzanich. You'll be in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with the rest of the stuff you need to know and an update on that story as well when we come back.
The live and local sound of Radio Chicago, 720 WGN.
To return to Breakfast with the Blackhawk, Drake Cajula will join us after 9 o'clock. Also, Superintendent Eddie Johnson and his son Daniel Johnson. It's all about the Gift of Life Award coming up. We'll fill you in on the gaps for those you're not familiar with the story. And Rokan's scheduled to appear before 10. Guess who's going on another trip? Mr. World Traveler over there, Dave Ennett. Where are you going now?
I'm going to Croatia and Slovenia.
Now, this is, and I'm not kidding when I tell you this, this, I'm told, is one of the hottest vacation spots in the world now.
It is. It's amazing, really, because I didn't know much about it. My daughter went there, I think, last year or the year before. Absolutely loved it. So it's just a beautiful country. So Steve Bertrand Travels put together a trip. We're going next July 3rd.
Okay.
We'll go Dubrovnik to Zagreb. We'll go into the Julian Alps. Which
that's where they make the Julian fries.
Yeah, that's where they make them. That's right. Yeah. And Julian potatoes. Mm-hmm. And we'll explore caves. There are all kinds of great destinations on this trip. And I'm looking forward to it. We had a great group of listeners who joined us in Italy this past summer. And I noticed all of them got together and had dinner one night at Ishnala Supper Club without me. I didn't take
that
personally.
Was it something you said on the trip? Or?
I don't think so. No, but you know, you come away from these trips with, and you just went through it, Steve, and in Prague, you get to meet a lot of great people.
Yeah, they really are great.
If you want some information, Steve Bertrand Travel, 847-606-6065, or go to stevebertrandtravel.com.
And you get to go hang out with Dave next July.
In Croatia. I mean, how cool is that?
Is that a week or 2 weeks?
It's 10 days.
10 months?
10 days.
Stand by. News time coming up right now. It's the Steve Cochran Show. We thank you for listening to show number 1,467. Who said it wouldn't last? And now it's news time.
Gajula at the Preds line, left wing. He'll dump it diagonally, right wing corner, Nashville zone. Bounces out in behind the net. Ellis can't clear. And now Kane put it in front. Gajula shoots and scores! Frank Gajula! A perfect handoff from Kane from the left wing corner. Gajula moved between the circles, took that pass, and in one motion snapped it past Pecorini.
On a team filled with young stars and young potential stars, we like Drake Gajula. He's one of our favorites. And by the way, I don't know who said this, but his last name is not Caligula.
That's you made that mistake the first time on with us.
Maybe I just seen the play. Yeah. Good morning, Drake. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
God, how much better did you guys look the other night?
Much better. We felt felt confident, felt good, and it felt good to get a W, and hopefully we can build off that. We played a pretty complete game. Obviously, not a perfect game, but we played a pretty complete game, and hopefully we can continue that momentum in the next one.
And, Drake, I know it wasn't first and foremost in your mind, but still, for the Blackhawks to have that kind of performance for their first win of the year against a team with whom you're somewhat familiar and had gotten off to such a good start, that had to carry some weight.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you can be a team that traded you away, it's always a good feeling. And, you always have those ones marked on the calendar. And I was glad to get that W in the, but that's not the most important reason, but it definitely helps the occasion.
I actually saw during the game, because you guys had kind of an uneven first period and then just blew them off the map in the second, but I saw something that frightened me a little bit, and that was Coach Colleton got emotional. He actually had an expression on his face, and keep in mind, Drake, we like Coach. He's on with us every week. But he had an expression on his face that wasn't the same expression, and he looked like he was slightly elevated, and his blood pressure may have gone up to 40 or 45. Did he say anything in particular that I missed?
You may have been on the ice
at that point. You may have missed it.
Yeah, I don't think so. He's pretty calm and cool back there, and doesn't say too much, but speaks when need to be spoken, and he's a really good coach. He helps us out a lot, and he lets us play, and that's probably the biggest thing is guys feel confident being able to play. And I'm not sure if I saw him with the major reaction that you saw, but
yeah, it was crazy.
It happened very often.
He was out of control. I felt scared.
The second period had been kind of an Achilles heel for you the first three games, but then the second period the other night was a dominant period by the Blackhawks. Was it something that you guys at that first intermission were you thinking about it? Was it something you talked about the morning skate? How did that all come about?
That's kind of been a theme over the last couple games. We've been coming out with pretty decent first periods, and then kind of laying an egg in the second and letting teams either crawl back or giving them the momentum. And the second period is a pretty important period, especially with the way the line changes are. You can really hold on to momentum and keep positive shifts going back to back. And finally we're able to have a consistent second period where we were able to roll lines and continuously play in the O zone and wear them down and create opportunities and break them down a little bit. And we talked about that for a couple of games now, and finally it came through.
Still playing less games than just about anybody in the league, but now it gets a little busier. Your ice time, you feeling good about it?
Yeah, obviously you want to play as much as you can, but obviously it's one of those things where you just do what you can in the time being and try to make the most of your opportunities, and hopefully the better you play, the more ice time you get.
Friday night it's Columbus, Sunday night Washington. And then next Tuesday, you got Vancouver, Thursday, Philadelphia, and so on and so on. Finally on the road against a real strong team in the East that really, I don't think anybody said, man, those Carolina Hurricanes. Hey. But they got off to a 5-0 start.
6-1, yeah.
No shortage of action coming up, Drake.
No, we got lots of games coming up, and I think it feels good. Guys have been kind of waiting around playing games slowly, and it's fun to get back into the swing of things, playing every other day, and that's the NHL season. That's what we do, and I think we're excited to finally get back to a regular routine and playing every other day here.
You want to say anything nice about any of your teammates or dump on any of them before we let you go?
No comment. No, I got lots of nice things to say about my teammates, and I'm looking forward to getting to know a lot of them more throughout the season. We've obviously got a lot of new players and new faces this year, and I'm still relatively new, so I'm still learning my way around, and it's going to be an exciting year. I'm really excited for it.
Based on longevity, a month from now, you're going to be a grizzled vet.
Yeah, maybe.
Just so you know. All right, Jake, thanks, bud.
All right, thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
There's thanks. Drake Kajula from your Chicago Blackhawks, and that's Breakfast with the Blackhawk. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, and Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson and family, professional and personal, will both be here next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, friend of the show and friend of all of us because he runs the best police department on the planet, keeping the city safe and making Chicago the great city it is. And he's not the kind of guy that got into the business to be famous. As a matter of fact, I dare say, knowing you a little bit, Eddie, this is about the least favorite thing you do, getting on the radio and TV and talking about yourself.
Yeah, it's not fun. But, you know, the reason why we're here today is something that I think I was just destined to do.
Well, here's the deal. You had a very public health scare. That happens when you're a public person. And who stepped up?
My son Daniel actually stepped up, and he will forever be my hero for doing that.
And Daniel's here now, a fine member of the force as well. Daniel, what's your rank?
Patrolman.
And that means you got out of the academy when?
I got out of the academy in May.
You must be pretty impressed with what your dad chose to do for a living if you wanted to get in, too.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's
pretty cool. Is he a pretty good cop? Have you graded him out yet?
You know what? Actually, we went on patrol together some months ago, and I was impressed. And I tell you, Daniel has the right demeanor and character for being a great cop, so I know he'll do well.
Well, I know you're proud of all your men and women, but it's got to be a special thing to see your kid doing this.
It is. But, you know, Steve, I tell you this. As a parent, you still worry, of course, but I have every confidence that he'll do exactly what he's supposed to do. And I am proud of him, extremely.
Now, here's the deal, Daniel. Your dad gets sick. You're worried because he's your dad.
Right.
And then you find out what the nature of the illness is, and you find out he needs a donor. When did you find out it could be you?
I found out it could be me. It was around March, I think.
And how long had he been, in need at that point?
It had been, a year?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. All right, so what was the decision process for you? Because I'm guessing he didn't say, give me your kidney, son.
No. No. Okay, so he told me he needed a donor. He asked if I wanted to even check to see if I was a match.
Sure.
And I was, you know, a little skeptical about it at first, but I was like, of course, why wouldn't I do it? You know, it's my dad. I love him. So, I prayed about it. I said if I was a match, then I would do it. And, you know, when we got the results back, I was a match. So I was like, okay, well, I was supposed to do this.
Well, you're a healthy young dude. We know how well your dad recovered right out of the gate. How'd you do?
Yeah, I did pretty okay. We had a contest to see
who was going to get up and run around first.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand what the contest was really about. Now, a lot of people don't even know that you don't need both kidneys, and that's why kidney donation is such an important thing. We talk with Jesse White about this all the time for making sure you're a donor. This is a big deal, and it's cool of you to step up too, so people understand you can do this. It doesn't have to be your dad. You can do this for anybody.
For anybody, yeah, as long as you're a match. And what I didn't know that I found interesting is that once you donate a kidney, if you need one in the future, you go to the top of the list.
Right.
Ah, that's good to know. Right. Yeah.
It's like frequent flyer organ
Absolutely.
Points.
Absolutely. Now, does this elevate your status to favorite child?
I tell you this.
My sisters think so.
Yeah, my daughters, they're constantly mentioning that, yeah, Dad, now you give him that preferential treatment.
Here's the thing. God bless Eddie. I hope you never need it, but they have organs too.
What I'm saying? They do. And I try to explain that to them. But I tell you this, Steve. You know, you wonder what your kids will turn out to be like when you're raising them. And I tell you this, Daniel, I didn't realize it, but going through the process of the transplant and all that, I found out that Daniel was a lot more like me than I ever realized because, you know, I'm one of those people that I don't worry about things until there's a need to worry about it, you know, because I just don't use up that energy. Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you this, once he made that decision to donate, it was go.
You know? He was all in.
Yeah, he didn't worry about it, and neither did I, to be quite honest. You know, my faith in God was there, and I trusted the doctors to do what they were supposed to do, and my hats go off to them, because after we came out of the transplant, both of us did extremely well, pretty much pain-free.
Yeah, they were amazing.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing.
The Gift of Life Award is given at the Gift of Life Gala, 34th annual for the National Kidney Foundation of Illinois, is coming up next Thursday, the 24th. It's a big night for you two.
It is, and I want to thank them for honoring us in that fashion. Of course, that's not why we do these things, but it is important to highlight the need for organ donation across the country, not just in Illinois, and they do a great job of doing that.
What do you want to add, Daniel?
No, just saying yes.
I mean, yeah. do you feel extra pressure because you're following in your father's footsteps? And
no, not really. I mean, people ask me that all the time, but it's a job like anything else. So I just do what I'm supposed to do.
And it happens to be a really important job. What do you want to do with it? Maybe you want to run the department someday? Because your dad never. Because I don't know if you know this, your dad never did.
If that's what's in the cards for me, then I'll do it. But that's
God's plan, right?
Yeah.
Let's just get out of the way.
There you go.
Right. That's the key. We had our newsroom ask a question. Eddie, this is more for you. But what did they want to know?
Yeah. So we know that it's being pushed back a little bit. It's a little bit delayed. But with the recreational pot sales coming soon, how are you planning to police it? How will you know when someone's overindulged? Is there like a breathalyzer test for weed? Like, how will you know someone's driving under the influence? That sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've talked to my colleagues across the country that already are in the business of trying to figure this out. So there's no testing right now specifically for cannabis. So what's going to happen is January 1, if we suspect that you are under the influence, then we'll give you the same DUI test that we would give to alcohol, related DUIs. And it's my understanding that across the country that test is standing up in court to determine whether or not you're under the influence. But I'm sure there's some smart people out there that are going to figure out this test so we can do it quickly. But
so it's a cognitive test now, right? Yes. It's like touch your nose, it's walking right. A straight line, that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly, yep. So, we'll see. We'll see. I would be being disingenuous if I didn't say that I am concerned about it, because I don't want to put cops in a position to where they can get in trouble for trying to ascertain whether or not somebody's under the influence.
So well, frankly, it's unfair to the police department.
It is. It's very unfair. So somebody out there, please figure this testing out so we can get this right.
Well, I'm telling you right now, in a time with a lot of a need for political will, this is why you vote. And this is why you let your people you elect know how you feel.
Absolutely.
So let your representatives know this is an unfair burden to put on the police, not just in Chicago, anywhere in Illinois.
Yeah.
And let's get this figured out.
Because, think about it, Steve. Although it's legalized in the state of Illinois, it's actually still a federal crime. So we're between a rock and a hard place with this thing. But, for the police department, we'll enforce the laws that are on the books.
The event, again, is coming up next Thursday night. It's there's still some tickets available, not a lot, mostly obstructed view. But get in there and get those tickets. You can go to nkfi.org/gala. That's National Kidney Foundation of Illinois. Also, some sponsorships available as well. And all your dollars matter, because it can help keep this thing going. Oh, by the way, I want to say hi to the Gift of Hope people, too. Deal with organ and tissue donation here in Chicago, and they're friends of the show.
Absolutely.
So thanks for what you guys are doing.
Thank you. And again, I'd just like to thank the National Kidney Foundation of Illinois and the Gift of Hope, because, I understand now more than anybody how important organ donation is, and I encourage everybody to be an organ donator.
Now, Daniel's going to be responsible for some of this, like everybody, one of the male and female cops that are on your staff. You got a teacher strike that looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
The last thing you want is for a kid to get hurt or anybody to get hurt in the middle of this. Is this something you've had to plan for weeks and months ahead?
Yeah, our last one was in 2012, and I was a deputy chief in Area Central at the time, so I'm acutely familiar with what we should be doing. So we've been planning for it, and I want people to know that we will do everything we can to keep everyone safe. So we just have to find responsible things for these kids to do while this strike.
What do you need from parents and caregivers of kids to help this problem and not hurt it?
What I need from parents is just to reinforce the fact with their children, if you're out of school for any extended amount of time, to do positive things. We have to keep pushing out that positive message. So if we can do that, then we should all be fine.
Again, we know school's off tomorrow. Even if there's a solution today, in all likelihood, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Let's be hopeful, hope that it does, but at least hope that it's short. And we don't want any cops hurt in the middle of this either.
No, we're prepared for it, you know. And hopefully, if it does come to a strike, it won't last that long. But I can assure you, Steve, we CPD is prepared for the strike.
You know, gee, I was talking to these guys in the green room, and I said, you know, if Daniel screws up, not at work, but, you know, forgets a birthday or whatever. He's got to have at least a couple free passes, don't you think?
He's got some points.
Absolutely.
We'll admit that.
And I just, you were teasing, but I just now recalled sitting here listening to you. Yeah, you never asked for this job. No. I remember that now. I'm like, yeah, you never did ask for this job. No, you were just supposed to be interim. And then,
I'm going to tell you something. I've told this before, and, you know, I consider us professional friends, but it's not like you and I hang out. I'm telling you right now, I'm proud of what you're doing for the city.
Thank you. And I'll tell you both that. Although I didn't apply for the job, I'm actually glad that I took it because I've been able to affect the city in a positive way and the rank and file police officers in a positive way.
You got a nickname for your dad? I'd start calling him New Kidney. Right? Anytime he looks at you funny and says, hey, go, really? New Kidney? Right. Really? Yeah. You coming down on me like that, New Kidney?
He brings it up every sister. Now and then.
They started calling me 1K and they called him 3K.
Hey, family that laughs together stays
there. You go.
God bless you both, man. Thanks and congratulations on the award next week from the National Kidney Foundation of Illinois. And you're always welcome here. You know that.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Good to see you. And again, hi to everybody at Gift of Hope. We'll come back in just a moment. Are we going straight to the news? All right, we'll do the headlines right now. All right, 9:40 now, and that is the love theme from Ro Khan. Good morning, Ro.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you, sir?
Could not be better.
Yeah, I just got back from a second trip in a couple of weeks, and I used to fly all the time. You fly way more than I do, but I saw something you may want to cover this afternoon on the always exciting Ro Khan show. Mm-hmm. This is from a website called Bro Bible, which I believe features you and I in a centerfold. And it is the most disturbing thing seen on a security x-ray as people are trying to get their bags on airplanes. Let's give you a few of these. This is from a Reddit thread about the same. 7 sex toys and a scissor in one suitcase.
Oh, my God. That's mine.
Terrifying.
You'll also be amazed how many people fly with guns and use the excuse, was that in my bag? I didn't know that was in my bag.
You know, there are a lot of people. You know, there's been some famous people over the years who've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's like, and I think a lot of people, like, the people who were in business or celebrities or whatever, carry a gun for personal protection. They just put it in a bag, figuring somehow they're going to get to it if they have to. And then the next thing you know, oh, damn it. I had no idea I was going through security today in the airports.
How about tasers, batons, and switchblades? And by batons, I don't think they mean the kind that you twirl and throw up in the air. let's see.
I believe you've just described everything my bookie goes through the airport with.
Did he also go through the airport with a dead premature goat preserved in liquid in a jar?
Not a goat.
good eating.
They ran the bag through an x-ray with a woman who had a very plump backpack. The backpack was stuffed as tightly as it could, again with, what do you think? A bunch of sex toys. What are these people all going to a convention?
Some people just need to relax.
One person was stopped with clips and various S&M devices that can always be used as weapons on board, especially if the wrong person is wearing them.
And can I ask you a question? I'm starting to move backwards here, but okay. So sex toy. What happens if you get on an airplane with a sex toy? I mean, you're not going to be able to commandeer the cockpit with a, you know.
That's a fair point.
Rabbit.
No, it's a fair point. unless the pilot is really annoyed by the sound of it. Not that I've heard it. One person tried to get on that plane with samurai swords. Not one, not two, four. You know, because four is better than three. And so it goes. It's all on brobible.com if you want to check that out.
Oh, my God.
How are you?
As well as could be expected. We've got it was interesting. Yesterday we were talking about this a little bit, that Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
I had this feeling about Pete Buttigieg, and I was watching this in the debate last night. This guy, he's got like this underlying seething thing. You look in his eyes. He does look very much like he just came off of a cereal box.
Oh, yeah. Like if there was a Leave It to Beaver redo, and right. He'd be Beav.
Or Lucky Charms. Or like the life. He might be Mikey from the Life box, yeah. All grown up.
Give it to Buttigieg. He'll eat anything.
So he last night made his move. And all of a sudden, it was like, who's this little feisty guy? It's like in high school, you know, where like the new kid, and then people start pushing the new kid around a little bit, and all of a sudden he's like, hey, wait a second!
Right.
And then he goes. So I was, you know, I kind of considered him this sort of a, you know, local guy. He's as close to a local guy as we're going to get in this thing, from South Bend. And there's something there. I don't think he's ever going to get elected president, but I think now all of a sudden I got something to watch on TV for a while.
I think anybody who ends up getting the nomination, if they win the White House, they need to put him in some position of prominence, whether it's a cabinet position or something else, because I think he's definitely got potential. He's got a lot of learning to do, but I think he's got a future.
You can tell who's also decided they're totally out of it, and they're just jockeying for a cabinet position. As you're watching last night, Kamala Harris, you know, keeps wanting to talk about. First of all, her voice does not match who you think what her voice should be. You ever notice that about her?
Yeah, if you close your eyes, yeah.
Yeah, you're like, wait, no, wait, which one? Who is that? Because she's got sort of this sort of nasal thing that goes on. Every time she started to answer a question was, well, you know, I run the largest, I'm the second largest attorney general in the United States of America. You know, it's like, okay, all right, we get it. You want president, you want this from President Biden /Warren/Buttigieg /Klobuchar. I don't know who the hell else would be in this thing. And why don't you just get out now? Why? I mean, I wanted half of those people to
announce last night.
Right. Hold up their hand and then pick up their podium and walk off with it.
Right. If I could have an extra 30 seconds, I'm resigning. I am ending my campaign right now. Could someone help me move this podium? You know who had a big night was Bernie the heart attack. You know, he looked better. He was feisty as ever. Yes, I had a heart attack. And he is going to get the endorsement of the squad, you have to say it that way, this weekend.
Oh, great. I think that pretty much finishes him as well. I see no path for Bernie.
No.
Because Bernie, first of all, I mean, he's up there and he's going, I am not a capitalist. People want to call me a capitalist. It was like a dirty word.
My plan is to take all successful people's money and use it.
There should be no billionaires. What we should do is we should line up all the billionaires on a dock and put them on a boat and send them back to billionaire land.
Yeah, and not a really nice boat either, like a regular boat, like a boat like you and I might have.
And he takes that right hand and he punctuates every syllable with the hand.
Yes,
you know, it's like a 1-2-3 move, billionaire.
I'm telling you, for having a heart attack 2 weeks ago, the guy looked great. I'm not saying have another one, but it did him a lot of good.
We did talk to our doctor about that yesterday. As you know, Steve, I just carry a doctor with me at all times.
Your hypochondria, I think it's important.
Yeah, we load him onto the air. And he said there's a paradox here when somebody goes through what he went through, which is once you get the stents, all of a sudden you feel invulnerable because, A, they touched your heart. B, you now blood flow. That you didn't have before.
So
you've got a lot of energy. You've got the sense of, you know, invulnerability. And in the meantime, they also tell you, you should probably take it a little easy as you get used to it. And
easy, sweezy. Don't overdo it. I've got billionaires to capture.
And he's like 90. I'm telling you, not going to be president of the United States. No. He's just not.
No, there's no way. The most interesting news out of the Democrat side of things is the potential for Michael Bloomberg still to get in. That would do Bernie in, because that would be two billionaires on one stage. So, yeah. What are you doing today?
All right. Well, we have.
No, I mean before the show. You're just hanging out. You're going to get some lunch.
You know, it's interesting. You should ask that. My mom just called me. She needs me to run an errand, and I said I have a job. You know, it's sort of like she still thinks I'm 15,
right?
And that like I can go. Could you go down to the pharmacy for me and pick up? You know, it's like I'm like I can't. I got a thing.
Right. I get. Right. You know, it's, I could hire someone to do that, but I can't do it for you.
Right. Well, that's basically what I said. But I said I don't think I can find anybody in the next 24 hours to do exactly what it is you need. So I'm going to have to take the rest of the day off to run an errand for my mom. I hope everybody understands. I'm going to send a note. I'm going to have a note sent to the management. Dear, to whom it may concern, is the way my mother would always fill it out because she never knew who anybody was anywhere. To whom it may concern, please forgive Ro. Please excuse Ro from work today, for he has to run errands for his mother.
You know, I don't see that as a problem. And I think the new Nexstar people are going to be thrilled with that.
Dear Mr. Suk, I cannot be here. Ro cannot attend work today.
Right. Though we have not met, Mom needs me right now. I'm leaving. All right. 3 o'clock so this afternoon, the RoCon Festival.
There you go.
See you, buddy. Bye. And we're coming back with your news top of the hour. Oh, Bill and Wendy still to come. Yeah, we got a lot to do before we're done at 720 WGN. And Dave and I were just talking off the air. Alex Smith, I don't need to tell you this. Alex Smith was the potentially highly regarded quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. He gets traded to the Washington Redskins. The Redskins are hopeful he can lead them out of their, 25-year slump that they've been in now. And he has a horrible leg break. And he just revealed that he has had 17 surgeries on his broken leg.
My goodness.
17 surgeries.
At that point, like, how do you even know what the original, like, I mean.
17 surgeries. It's like that surgeon had ADD and left in the middle.
They had originally said he had 6. 17, part of it following an infection, and they had to remove tissue. But
it's unbelievable.
I just wouldn't think it'd be good to even go under anesthesia that many times.
No, not unless you're playing the line.
These guys don't use anesthesia.
Oh, no. They don't. They're so tough. They don't. Yeah. They just have surgery wide awake.
Dick can never let anybody have anesthesia.
Wow. No. It's just like a swig of like whiskey.
Right.
Like
no, it's a Band-Aid.
Good old days.
You get a Band-Aid.
You bite on a bullet.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, I want to say hi to our friend Patty Vasquez. Patty Vasquez is running for the State House of Representatives in the 19th District, and she's got a kickoff to the campaign tonight. And if you want to look at her website, it's friendsofpattyvasquez.com. So good for Patty. At 9:54, Bill and Wendy will join us from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. You'll have Steve after that on 720 WGN.
The live and local sound of Radio Chicago, 720 WGN.
Bill and Wendy are here. Good morning.
Hello, Steve.
To you.
And to you and yours.
I just realized how large the stack of papers that Wendy brings in.
Wendy's old school. She didn't deal with this digital crap. She's carrying around the show prep.
All that stuff you see, G, that's our first 20 minutes.
Wow.
There's over 100 topics that we'll cover.
And you get to all of it.
Every one of them.
Your show is challenging. Yeah. Wow. This is all the stuff
Bill is challenged.
Yeah. Yep.
So
not embarrassed by that.
So, what are you doing today, Wendy?
Oh, man. We have so much packed into today. The Ides of March are celebrating 55 years, so they're going to play for us. Our show
what
psychologist.
What color is Jimmy's hair?
Purple. He's gone with purple still for purple? Quite some time.
Okay. Yeah. Go Vikings.
Give him a hug.
All right.
Dr. John Duffy will be here. And Yusuf Salam, who is part of the Central Park Five, he's in town for Ideas Week. And
it's gonna be on. That's great.
Yes, that's right at the start of the show, so don't be late.
Yeah, no,
that's amazing,
listen,
incredible story.
You're talking to the new prompt on time, Steve.
Yeah,
here. That's what I'm talking
Congratulations.
About.
Starting when?
Show number 1,488.
Oh, what was last week? and did you guys watch any of the debate last night with Bernie the heart attack?
Uh huh. He didn't have any heart attacks during the debate, though.
He was a little calmer than usual, too, wasn't he?
Did you think so?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. My doctor tells me I can't get excited. I think that he is going through what Ro just talked about a moment ago, and that's post-heart attackulation.
Is there a thing? I didn't know there was a thing.
Yeah, because you're getting blood flow where you didn't get it before.
Oh. Wait, how do you know this?
Excited.
And you're happy to be alive.
Because Ro just told me.
Okay. Oh. I was all like, right, haven't had a heart attack.
Close. No. No, I'm not kidding. I had something that was, it's the artery next to the widowmaker.
Now I feel horrible.
Making fun of me?
Yeah, just, I'm sorry.
Let's be honest. Isn't that part of your job?
So, it really is.
There's an artery. Well, there's lots of arteries. Thank God we have them all. But there's an artery next to the Widowmaker that I had. They described it as severe inflammation. It wasn't necessarily a blockage. Medication could treat it. But you know that thing where they go, feels like somebody's standing on your chest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what that's like until it feels like somebody's standing on your chest. That pain's hard to describe. It's real.
Great.
It's a real deal. Do not ignore the symptoms.
Or is it intermittent? When do you get it?
Well, eventually it stops or you're dead.
Oh.
It's pressure, too. I mean, that's
pressure.
What the deal is.
Yeah, it feels
now
like...
Now that I know this, I'm going to be knocking those candy bars out of your hand.
What candy bars?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Those are the old days. That's bad, Steve. It feels like somebody's taking a vise and putting it on either side of your shoulders and continues to crank it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's fun.
My doctor, I thought I was having a heart attack once. It was just, you know, anxiety. And he said, does it feel like two elephants are having sex on your chest? And I said, no. And he said, then you're not. But women present differently.
Did you say, having had that never happen, how would I know?
And it's like the number one killer for women, right? And
elephants having sex on your stomach is the number one killer of
just
women.
Just listen to your body. When your body goes, you're in trouble. It's probably in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, that's true.
And the weird part is, women in particular have this, and apparently me, because I'm in touch with my feminine side. I had severe pain between my shoulder blades and my back. You go, well, my heart's not there.
Right.
That must be from golf.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nothing to mess around with, kids. But definitely do what I did. Drive yourself to the hospital and get lost on the way.
Yeah. Just call for an ambulance.
It's all true. We're coming back tomorrow on Thursday. Dave, can you be here tomorrow?
I'm planning to. Thank you, Steve, for the invitation.
Look forward to seeing you then. And among our guests will be Pat Fitzgerald before the big Northwestern Ohio State tilt, as you say in sports.
Yes.
On Friday night. Stand by, Bill and Wendy, after the news.